Is there any reason why you wouldn't check out the 12 days of deals this holiday season on Amazon.com?
No real logic.
Get the best deals on everything you need this holiday season and help support Rob as a podcast whenever you start your shopping with our link, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, robhasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who can't wait to check out Keith Nail starring in Indiana Jones and the Cambodian Temple of Doom, Rob Sestrina. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. It's our voicemail show for episode number 13 of Survivor Cambodia, and we're very excited to have our good buddy Mike Bloom here to answer your voicemails. We've got so many things to talk through. It's going to be a really good show today. I'm very excited that you guys are checking this out. I think that you guys are going to like it. I have so many notes, and I know everything that we're going to talk about. So very excited to be here. Of course, this comes on the heels of, I thought, a great part one to this week's recap, where Boston Rob Mariano came in and talked about everything from this episode. I thought that Rob did an outstanding job last night as we talked through everything. And so I think that you would enjoy that. And I think we're also going to have a lot of fun here today with Mike Bloom. Of course, you know, Survivor Know-It-Alls. We also had the exit interview with Abby Maria. Make sure you don't miss any of it when you subscribe to Rob Has a Podcast. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes, or if you want to get our app where you can get all of the stuff that we're doing on post-show recaps, which is our scripted TV podcast and reality TV wrap-ups, where we're covering shows like Top Chef, plus more Survivor coverage with Jordan Parhar every weekend and stuff like that. You can go and get our app in the Apple Store. Rob Has a Podcast app. Go to robhasawebsite.com/app to get it directly. All right, everybody. All season long, people have been asking me, you're going to have Mike Bloom on for a voicemail. You're going to have Mike Bloom on for a voicemail. You better believe it. Here he is, the Survivor historian. You hear him on post-show recaps, Once Upon a Time recap. Plus, he is one of the voices on the new Top Chef wrap-up.
Give it up for Mr. Mike Bloom!
There we go. I could whip to this.
Yes. Mike Bloom. Mike.
Hello.
How are you?
I am doing great. I am so happy to be back. I'm happy for people who have apparently reached out to you to get me on here. I only paid about half of them, so it's good to hear that there's some contingent out there that actually wants me back here.
Here you are, Mike Bloom, who just, but 2 years ago, nobody even knew who you were.
I was a nobody.
All over the podcasting world.
A common scrub who was brought into the palace of podcasting and raised to serve alongside the royalty.
One of the preeminent voices in the Survivor community and branching out into all other things. Mike, how have you been?
I've been great. I am coming up on almost 6 years of being 6 years. Wow. It feels like 6 years, 6 months of being happily married at this point, which
it feels like 6 years.
It kind of does, but kind of doesn't at the same time. 6 months fly by before you know it, though. I believe 6 months is the end of what they call the honeymoon phase, right, Rob? Can you tell me what am I to expect now that this sort of marked period has ended?
Oh, it gets better, Mike. It gets better.
All right. Can you uncross your fingers and tell me what the real answer is?
Yeah. You know, Mike, I don't know this about you. Is your wife a Survivor fan?
So I got her into being a Survivor fan right when we started dating. It was actually sort of like, you know, if I went on the show Baggage when I was in college, I'd probably say one of my pieces of baggage would be that I was a closeted Survivor fan, because at the time, like, nobody I knew watched it and I thought it was uncool. And so she came over to my house one night. I was still living with my parents, and I said, like, okay, tried to brief her, like, listen, just so you know, I like Survivor a lot and we're going to watch this episode together. Is that okay? And she's like, yeah, that's fine. It ended up being the merge episode of Survivor Karamoan. And she really liked it. And so that's when I knew, Rob. That's when I knew.
That's
it was
when
all
you knew.
Over.
You popped the question after that.
Yes, exactly. And it was Survivor Karamoan, so I knew we could make it through anything after that.
Hey, Survivor Karamoan, if you're going to get into it at any point, I think the merge would be the way to do it. Corinne gets booted. That's a good episode.
That's true. Maybe if I showed her the episode where Cochran balanced the hat on his head, I'm sure she would have broken up with me right there and then.
Okay. All right. So we've got a lot to talk through here today with Mike Bloom. Final voicemails of the regular season
after the season is over, Josh Wigler and I are going to do one last voicemail show to sort of put this whole thing to bed. But here we are. I always love the penultimate show of the season voicemail. I thought it was always a lot of good stuff to talk through as we are on the road to the Survivor finale.
Yeah, we have, what, 13 hours to talk about, and we still have six people left in the game. This is a supersized season.
Yeah, really, it has the feel of one of those like Redemption Island seasons where it's there's so many people that are left in the game, but there's still only six people, but they're all still in the game. No sort of like Redemption Island wonkiness to have happen. So we're going to have three tribal councils coming up. So really, anything could happen, and we'll talk through a bunch of the different scenarios here today, Mike.
I'm really excited. I mean, this has been a really interesting season. I mean, I would say in terms of gameplay and the strategic elements, I feel like that those elements have been delicious. They've been A-plus material. The interesting thing to me is, you know, I'm probably more centric on storytelling and narrative elements than some of your other guests that you usually have on the podcast. And it's been a little wackadoodle, I'll say. I think the interesting thing about when you edit towards a strategic perspective is that when you edit things more on an episodic basis, and it seems like you're containing stories within a 42-minute period, that certain things don't really carry over into other episodes. And I feel like when you edit for The Blind Side, sometimes you unfortunately leave some other things on the side that you could really want to watch later on.
Yeah, well, that's definitely something that we're going to talk about here in the voicemails today. So looking forward to all that. Why don't we actually dig in first with a couple different things before we talk about the voicemails? First off, I always like to get the take on the voicemails show. What was your take on Abby Maria on the exit interview?
Well, our Tinkerbell, I thought, I mean, as always, she brought the fire, and it was interesting because I feel like, I don't know, these players are removed from the game, right? The game ended, Abby Maria got voted out on the 4th of July. So she has been out of the game for, you know, almost 5 months at this point, more than 5 months, I should say. It's interesting how in these exit interviews, you're able to immediately put yourself back in the mind frame of that game. She was pretty, you know, she collected herself probably a lot more than she would on the island, but she was still holding some very big feelings of resentment towards people left in the game. And I was super surprised, as you were, that when you asked like who are you not looking forward to seeing at the finale, that she mentions Shireen and PG, people that she had interacted with a month ago, instead of talking about the people that immediately had worked with her and blindsided her.
Yeah, that really did surprise me as well, because, you know, sometimes at the point where I'm starting to get ready to do my exit interview, there's a couple of the exit interviews that the first couple, typically like Gordon Holmes really quick, has a really quick turnaround, and Dalton Ross too. And sometimes I'll start to see like those like headlines sort of come across my Twitter. And I saw that Dalton Ross had talked to Abby Maria, and I think she had given a quote to Dalton Ross and said that she had hoped Tasha would have drowned. Yep. And then I was reading with her interview with Gordon Holmes, and they did the word association. And she said, for Spencer, she answered, "I'm not really a fan of Spencer. Spencer can go die in a fire."
I love how I'm not really a fan of Spencer, so he can die in a fire. But PG was definitive die in a fire.
Did PG get die in a fire also?
I believe PG also got die in a fire.
Yeah, that she did. Let's finish with PG. It was die in a fire as well. I've tried to apologize to that chick so many times, and she continues to hate on me on social media. I just don't have time for it. Go away.
Yeah, I mean, I also love that it's, you know, like, hate, or die in a fire, according to Abby Maria. But die in a fire can also mean, like, the middle option as well. Like, well, I'm kind of lukewarm on Spencer, so he can die in a fire. I don't outright hate him.
So Abby Maria seems to be the person who comes out of this thing with just the most overall, like, there's been a couple people like Cass that have had sort of, like, highly targeted words, choice words for people. But Abby Maria does come out of it with, you know, a lot of choice words for people.
And it doesn't help, she's pretty prickly from the week before, where she was receiving apparent death threats for what she was doing to Joe the week before.
Get over it.
Yeah.
That's Abby Maria to the entire community of Survivor fans that wrote on the Facebook page.
Well, it certainly seems like the Joe and Abby Maria thing is more complicated than ultimately what was shown. You've seen different people say on social media, and Joe himself say, you know, some things that are probably somewhat regrettable about Abby Maria coming out of this. And then you have the reaction that Abby Maria gets. And, you know, we talked about this a lot on last week's voicemail show. If you really hate to see anybody sort of get that sort of backlash. At the end of the day, it is a TV show. You really can't be, you know, saying those sort of things to anybody on social media, let alone people that are on a game show that you don't even know.
So do you think, and this is sort of a radical idea that I'm suggesting, how would you feel about bringing back the sort of social media blackout for current contestants going forward?
Well, I don't think that this is necessarily the same thing as the social media blackout. I think I probably would be okay with it because I feel like that there are different things that happen this season where, you know, different, you see pictures of survivors like posing together and like, oh, this person's going to be my best friend forever. And then, you know, okay, well, obviously this person's not going to screw this person over. I would be okay with the social media blackout. I'm perfectly okay with going back to it, but this is more of the fans dealing with the, you can't have, you know, you don't want a social media blackout from the fans to the players.
Yeah. Well, that's what I would suggest. Like maybe like have them, I don't know, make their Twitter accounts inactive for the period of time when the show is on, just because I think that's the big problem as well, is that I feel like if you do have negative comments towards a person, I say subtweet to your heart's content. I know that's sort of looked down upon, but I think the minute you start tagging actual survivors in your comments to them, I feel like that's when things don't end up right.
Well, you make a great point though. So if Abby Maria doesn't have an Instagram that she's posting stuff from the episodes on, nobody's going to, they don't have a place to go to Abby Maria's Instagram and say, hey, you know, we hate you, Abby Maria. How could you do that to Joe? You're moldy. You have clown hair. So it's a good point of if there is a social media blackout, if you do not have a place for people to go to, then people cannot harass you online.
Yeah, exactly. And that's sort of harkening back to like the old school days of Survivor as well. I mean, I know Jerry Manthe was still probably getting yelled at while she was walking along the street from cars passing by saying how she's the worst person in the world. But still, if you eliminate the ability to actually have messages come into, you know, she can actively seek out all she wants to go onto the Facebook page and see the comments that have been made against her. But if she's not being tagged in things, the messages don't appear in her feed and she doesn't have to look at them if she doesn't want to.
Oh, that's pretty good. So I think that's the move.
I would hope so. And I know people are would be miffed about that because I know, you know, there's a lot of transparency these days in being able to communicate with current and former players. And I know, you know, especially with a season with returning players, a lot of people want to be able to have conversations. And obviously, as David Bloomberg alludes to in his weekly podcast, there's a lot of behind the scenes information that's revealed that way. But I don't know, a few moldy apples have spoiled the bunch here in terms of people responding and utilizing that transparency to negative effects.
So that being said, with the Abby Maria exit interview, let's talk a little bit about the secret scenes, because I thought there were some interesting things on the secret scenes. And one of the people that we've sort of had a hard time following in terms of where they are in the story is Kimmy. And I feel like that most of us just sort of assume, oh, Kimmy, she's just a floater. She's not doing anything this season, but I thought Kimmy had a particularly interesting and revealing secret scene in terms of where her head is at, because we saw her talking about the Women's Alliance last week, and then she was back to voting with Jeremy and Tasha this week. Did you happen to watch the secret scene with Kimmy?
I did, and I was happy to get it, because as the only old school person left and as a Survivor historian, I feel like I have a vested interest somewhat in Kimmy's status in the game.
So I want to play this for you guys, and then we sort of discuss and talk through where Kimmy's head is at in the game.
Honestly, Wentworth and I, if the two other girls were on board, we could have an all-girl alliance and do this, and I don't understand what the problem is. And if we had to go and peck off one of our own because a man kept winning immunity, then you peck off Abby. Make it easy. Peck off Tasha. That's fine.
Now, is peck off, is that a new neologism?
I think Kimmy's slowly becoming a chicken.
Well, is that why she got to peck off? Because she loves the chicken so much?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sick and tired of hearing about the chickens, Kimmy.
I think once the chicken got released, I think she's sort of been imbued with the spirit of the released chicken. And now she feels like...
Damn.
Yeah, now she's just part of the scenery now, which is why she's been in the background so much. It's as if she's one of the chickens pecking around while everyone else is talking strategy.
Who is Kimmy going to peck off next?
I don't know. Well, it's got to be a man, right? Because there can only be one rooster in the hen house.
Okay, so Kimmy does talk about who she'd like to peck off.
But me and Wentworth combined in our first games that we played have 27 days of playing. And here we are on day 35 doing well in our own games. So it would be sweet, sweet justice if Wentworth and I could be down at the end pleading our case and saying, hey, jury, look what we did. I just got to figure out how to get there. And right now, you know, if I vote out Abby, I might, that might not work for me. You know, it might not get me with Wentworth in the end. It's just going to be so complicated because Spencer has to go. Spencer has to go in my eyes. So if he doesn't win immunity, I think that me and Keith and Wentworth would definitely vote out Spencer. Now, Jeremy and Tosh, not so much, but it would be 3-1.
So I thought that was very interesting that Kimmy is saying that she would like to see Spencer go out of the game next.
Yeah, so a lot of people have been talking specifically in this endgame about why aren't they targeting Jeremy? Why aren't they targeting Spencer? And I think between this and Keith at the reward talking, suggesting Jeremy right off the bat for this new Final Three deal to get rid of him first, I think people are suggesting it. It's just that they're suggesting it to the wrong people. Keith wasn't fortunate in suggesting that idea to Spencer, who is close with Jeremy. And so Spencer immediately turned it down for his own selfish reasons. So I mean, Survivor, everyone's name is being thrown out there every day. I just feel like these people are throwing out the names to the wrong people, and that's why they're not sticking.
So I think that there's a very interesting sort of Cold War being fought here between Kimmy and Spencer. And I feel like that we've seen this a lot on Survivor, where it's like there's maybe this four-person alliance where if Spencer is true to that four-person or three-person Jeremy-Tasha thing, where Kimmy feels like if I could get rid of Spencer, she's really like the key swing vote between Jeremy and Tasha and the Wentworth and Keith thing.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, Steven talked about how Kimmy was probably, he was probably more of the fulcrum in that little buy-on group because Jeremy and Tasha were an apparent pair and Kimmy was closer to him. And maybe this is sort of the result of that, that with Steven being gone, even though Kimmy's voted with them, she still feels like she's a little bit on the outside of the group and she feels like she can jump over.
And on the other hand, I think if Spencer could get rid of Kimmy, he becomes that interesting fulcrum vote between the Jeremy and Tasha side and the Wentworth and Keith side.
I wonder why Kimmy wasn't shown doing this on the show, though. I mean, I sort of have a theory about Kimmy here, and it sort of ties into an editing theory that I have that of recent, there have been a lot of people who've like one person a season who's been given something I call like pre-merge edit syndrome, where you'll have like one or two episodes in the pre-merge where this person is like a star of the episode. They have a lot of confessionals. They're central to the action. Then they're going to disappear for long periods of the game. And then they're going to finish in like the mid-jury phase. And I feel like Kimmy's sort of faded to that position. You know, she had her big Monica episode. We saw her a little bit last week, but other than that, she has been that chicken pecking around in the background. And I have a feeling that she might be like one of the first people to go in the finale.
Do you think she could get pecked off first on Wednesday?
Yeah, I mean, like, to compare this to other people, like, this is a sort of the similar situation that, like, Sierra from last season was in, too, in terms of an edit. Remember, like, Sierra, towards the end of the pre-merge, like, was a big person. She, after Lindsay was voted out, she was pissed off about it. She became the big swing vote when the tribe switched up. And then she disappeared for a good 7 episodes, and then she got voted out first in the finale. And, I can list off, like, Caleb was another one in Blood versus Water, Jeremiah in Cagayan. I feel like these recent Survivor seasons have always had this one person who has a big episode in the pre-merge, then they disappear for a long time. But
what do you call this theory?
The pre-merge edit syndrome, PMES.
Then you got to workshop that name.
I throw that out to the crowds
the
to
PMES.
Because I didn't want to associate, I didn't want to call it pre-merge syndrome for obvious reasons. But yeah. I feel like this is a like a modern phenomenon almost, that there is one person that's going to dip under the radar for such a long period of time, and it doesn't bode well for their winning chances. And I feel like the reason why they're sort of hiding these aspects of Kimmy from us is that she's ultimately going to finish in that position and sort of fills that role.
I definitely hear what you're saying, but it's hard to imagine a scenario where Kimmy is the first person out in the final six. I mean, how would the votes go where Kimmy is the person who gets voted out?
Well, what if something that hasn't happened in 31 seasons of Survivor before happens and Kimmy sort of gets the blowback from that?
It's certainly possible, and we'll talk about that scenario coming up here in the voicemails, but it's almost, to me, odd that it would happen at the final six. I mean, in terms of where you have this four-person alliance, I mean, it would really have to be if either Kimmy or Spencer would flip to the other group, and maybe there's some sort of like weirdness that goes on between you have these two pairs where it seems very unlikely that anybody is going to flip from the voting block of Jeremy and Tasha. Seems like that those two are sticking together no matter what. And it also seems like you have Kelly and Keith are sticking together no matter what. And it seems like that the two free electrons could be either Spencer or Kimmy. And it's hard to imagine a scenario where, you know, they end up where some, like, both voting blocks turn against one of them.
Well, I mean, let's look back at the confessional we just heard. I mean, Kimmy said she wanted to vote with Kelly and Keith this past episode to vote out Spencer. You know, maybe if she's thinking in this sort of Sierra Easton big moves mindset, maybe she does force a tie at the final six and the three of them decide to vote out Spencer and it's a 3-3 tie. And then the fireworks, and not the ones that we saw in Ponderosa, literally, but more metaphorical fireworks happen. I mean, Kimmy had that confessional, even though she only had a couple of confessionals in this post game. She had one in the last episode where she said, "I'm nobody's pawn." And maybe that's what that means, that she says, you know, "I'm done being the low man on this buy on totem pole. Let me hop over and try something else."
It would be interesting to have this sort of prisoner's dilemma between Spencer and Kimmy, where they could both, like, flip to one side and ensure that they get to the final four, but one of them is probably going to be the odd person out in the four, or they could, you know, decide to go separate ways. One of them could go to one side, one of them could go to the other side, force this sort of 3-3 tie, especially if they end up with the votes, like, one side is gunning for Spencer, the other side is gunning for Kimmy. And in some ways, they'd actually, you know, sort of get some safety for themselves because they wouldn't be eligible for the revote.
Yeah, that would be, like, crazy. That'd be, like, level zero Survivor if they told each other, like, let's split up and let's force a tie so that we'll both get safe during the rock draw. That would be pretty crazy.
Well, and that would also be really crazy then if the immunity idols also got involved there, where we sort of knew it was going to be this 3-3 split, and then you get the immunity idols involved as well.
Yeah, if only two people are actually going to be up for elimination, that'd be like Bobby, John, and Stephanie. I think that's the last time only two people have been viable to be eliminated.
Yeah, so that would actually be really crazy. So maybe we'll come back to that. We'll put a little bit of a pin in that. So just sort of an interesting scene from the secret scenes that I wanted to talk about before we actually get into the voicemails. And now let's actually dig into the calls. I've actually got so many calls to get through. So we've got a lot. So hope everybody has ready to go, has their iPhone is like over 30% of battery, yeah, at least.
I hope everyone has already listened to the first episode of Serial Season 2 so you can concentrate solely on this podcast.
Yes. Okay. So here we go. And why don't we start it off again, Austin in Australia.
Hi, Robin Bloom. This is Austin from Australia, and I'm calling in once again about Survivor Third Time's the Charm. So I'm wondering, is Abby Maria going to get a third chance to make a spectacle? I mean, you got to give it to her. If you have with her, you're dead. So thanks for taking my question. Bye.
Austin seems a little extra soft-spoken. It's like he was, like, yeah, in a library, like, leaving us a voicemail.
I feel like he was, like, hiding under a desk escaping some sort of authority figure.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Abby Maria that was going after him.
He's hiding to Abby Maria's
questioning
house.
The idea that she deserves a third chance and she comes after
Hi,
him.
Hi, guys. I just had a quick question I just wanted to ask. So, all right. That being said, Abby Maria, third time's the charm. What's your take on this?
I mean, as a character person, I would absolutely love it. I really loved watching her in terms of the type of person that she is, and also the place that she played in the game, where she really was, you know, the interesting thing about having Joe in the game is that since he kept winning immunity, everyone sort of had to orient their strategy around that. But they sort of had to doubly orient it around this idea of Abby, who is this really loose particle, even more so than Cass has shown to be. And so I thought it was just really fun to watch them sort of orient themselves around her, even though she can be very loyal to a certain extent. That being said, I don't know how she would actually do it a third time around. I think she got extremely lucky that people decided to target Vetus over her, and she was very close to being the first person kicked off of this season. But I would, even if it's just 3 days on the island, I would still enjoy seeing her again.
I think that you make a good point. I think she easily could have been the first person voted out of this season, and then her moving on ended up being this sort of very fun thing that people had to navigate around. So I think that I would definitely be open to Abby Maria back a third time. You know, Josh Wigler has talked about this a lot, and he actually talked about it more in terms of Wu and Keith Nail coming into this season of how do you disarm the Keith Nail bomb, which to me, it turns out I don't think Keith Nail is that much of a bomb to do. As long as you don't like throw anything overly complicated at him, I think that Keith Nail is pretty easy to work with or work around. Whereas Abby Maria is so mercurial, right? She's like all over the place. And, you know, you could just like look at her the wrong way, or you could be doing something and she could think that you are talking to somebody and you weren't even. So she really is just such the ultimate wild card in the game.
I heard How to Dismantle a Keith Nail Bomb is the next U2 album title.
Yeah. I think you just don't try to trick him. I think that's pretty much, you know, it's pretty straightforward. But the Maria thing is that she sees things where there aren't things there and then confronts you about them.
Yeah, I'd say she combines the worst qualities of Courtney Merritt from Exile Island and Jamie Newton from Guatemala in that, as Joe pointed out last week, she does have that sort of dangerous goat quality where, you know, she has a basic spot at the end if people decide to put up with her for that long. And that's very harrowing for only three spots left at the end of the game. That's something that could cost you a spot at $1 million. On the other hand, she sort of has this rampant paranoia that is really getting on people's nerves day after day after day. And so I feel like this vote in particular wasn't about the goat factor as much as it was about the fact that she's just an extremely volatile personality. And there's no way to really gain control of that vote. And that's really key when you only have six or seven people left in the game. And it really comes down to a single person can shift the entire tide.
Yeah, she's paranoid, but also like vengeful, where I think there's been a lot of Survivor players that are sort of paranoid. And Cochran and Karamoan talked about how like the paranoia was good for him because it made him more vigilant. But with Abby Maria, she has this paranoia, which turns into that she sees things where there may not be things there and then wants to get back at them for the things that she thinks that she's seen, which may not always have been the case. And she's very mistrusting of people. And so it makes her a really complicated, almost sort of game twist that you have to navigate around.
Yes, she is she the next twist that Survivor sent? We recruited a contestant who actually wasn't supposed to be on this season and told them to wreck everything.
Yeah, she kind of is the mole.
Yeah, she's like on the Joe Schmo show. She'll step out of the reunion and take off her mic pack and reveal that this is all a stunt.
Abby Molria?
Abby Molria. That's if you rearrange the letters. That's what it spells.
Yes.
Abby Downer.
We're on to the conspiracy, CBS.
All right. I do have another question about Abby Maria, if she was going to come back in a specific season format that we've talked about on the show. This is from Rachel.
Hi, Rob. It's Rachel Caper. My question is about Abby and a potential Survivor rival. We know that RCD has no interest in playing with the Brazilian Dragon, but this season provided a lot more options. She got into it with PG, Shireen, Joe, Tasha. Who would be willing to play with Abby Maria in a Survivor rival season? Would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
All right. So let's assume RC, the natural rival, the Joker to Abby Maria's Batman. Let's just assume that she was out.
We're in a dark timeline if Abby Maria's Batman.
The Brazilian Batman.
You are dead to me like my parents.
Oh, good. Spoilers. Okay. So let's assume that RC is like, okay, under no circumstances, do I ever play the game? Again with Abby Maria.
Actually, she could make a great Joker. They both have such distinct laughs.
Yes. I guess she would be the Joker. So that being said, who would be Abby Maria's new rival if you were going to cast Abby Maria in the Survivor rival season?
All right, so I'm going to ask the Dan Lembo question. Can they ask if it's mandatory? You know, do we have to choose the person that would most likely sign up or the person that we would want to have to sign up for it?
Well, give me your pick.
I mean, I would love to see PG on there, but unless the challenge is, you know, especially if there's a challenge of like get your partner out of a burning building, I don't think they're going to get along too well. And I don't know if PG would want to go on if it meant competing with Abby.
But I think that for the most part, I think that most Survivor players are so desperate to go back and play a second time or a third time, especially people like somebody like PG who sort of was out early on. I think that you want, and believe me, I can speak from experience where if you go out early your second time around, that you sort of want to prove that, you know, well, it wasn't that the first time was the fluke. The second time was the anomaly. Let me go back out there and I'll show you. And especially, you know, you have the idea of vengeance where you could sort of like prove not only that, but you could also get this person that you don't really like out of the game. So you think PG would be the most natural person?
I mean, I feel like, again, the first three episodes seems like they were years ago at this point, but I mean, they had a very fluent rival. I'd say those two were the biggest rivals in the first three episodes, aside from Savage's one-sided feud with Steven. And so I think, you know, that was probably, I know Abby got into arguments with other people, but I feel like that was Abby at her Abbiest, if you will. And I feel like if you really want to capture the essence of Abby Maria's rivalry, you go with PG.
Okay. PG. I'm trying to think of who else we could potentially. I don't think that Shireen necessarily is going to. I mean, I feel like, if Shireen has a rival, I feel like you're probably going to go back to the Worlds Apart crew.
Yeah, you have a deep well to dig out of.
Yeah. So I think that's probably the best. What about Wu for Abby Maria's other rival?
I mean, I feel like that's a little tepid. You know, it's like in the challenge rival season, how they range from like actual rivals to, oh, they got in a Twitter feud. I feel like you have the "he voted for me twice" will be the tagline of the rivalry, but that's about it. We didn't see too much out of it when Wu actually got voted off, even though Abby was apparently suggesting him behind the scenes. So I would still say, or maybe they go like an exes route and do Pete Yerkowski.
Oh, well, they're not exes. They're back together.
Oh, they're back together? Well, I mean, who knows? Relationships are so volatile these days that they might be broken up by the time the season starts.
Yeah. I'm so mad at myself, Mike, because in my notes for the Abby Maria exit interview, I meant to ask her about Wu, and I wanted to say, now, hold on a second. Now, Wu, he voted for you once, right? And I really wanted to just get into that with her, and I was so mad at myself that I forgot to do it.
Well, you would have had to ask that as your last question, because that would have completely derailed the interview. She would have gone into a huge tangent about like, Wu, he pissed me off. He did this. This is that. Let me tell you about Angkor. And nobody wants to hear about Angkor.
Yeah, I really just wanted to be like, no, Abby Maria. Now, I thought this season that Wu only voted for you once.
That's like such a Bryant Gumbel thing. Now, Abu, I heard that Wow voted for you once. Is that correct?
I just really wanted to get her going on the Wu voted for me two times. He voted for me twice.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's Survivors. We have to bring her back for a third season, no matter what, just so you can ask that question again. Or maybe someone will wake the dragon again by voting for her three times.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go into our next voicemail question. And it's something that's on so many people's minds after last night. So let's just dig into it and see what we can figure out from David.
Hey, Rob and Mike. This is David from Pasadena. And I have a question regarding the next time on Survivor. Jeff says that this has never happened in 31 seasons of Survivor, and I was wondering what you think he's talking about. Personally, I have two theories. First, that both Jeremy and Kelly play their idols at a tribal council, canceling all the votes, or that there's a tie at final tribal council. What do you think? Bye.
David is asking the question that's been on so many people's minds. The idea of both the idols being played in the same tribal council has been talked about quite a bit from people on Twitter. Now, first, before we explore that a little bit, is there any possibility it isn't that?
Well, first of all, when you said it was a question that was on everybody's minds, I was pretty sure it was going to be about Steven's shirt at tribal council.
We'll talk about that.
Hopefully we can traipse that territory later. Yeah, I mean, like David outlined, there are two realistic possibilities here, which is the tie, the all votes nulled at tribal council and the tie at final tribal council. People have suggested the third one may be the final four, but I am putting that out of sight, out of mind, because I do not even want to think about that being a possibility in this game. I mean, the tough thing about it as well is that Jeff doesn't have the best recollection of Survivor history. You know, he'll say things like, this is this only the second time that this has happened, when it's happened like five times beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's just out on the island. He's just literally spewing out at the mouth any figures he may think of, even if they're false. He's sort of the Brian Williams in that regard. But there's a chance that he might be remembering things wrong. But if it's such a monumental moment that they do decide to keep it in there, it's got to be something that has really never happened before. And those are the two that really come to top of mind, because we do have two idols in the game and we do have 10 jurors. You know, if there, I'm trying to think if there really was something else, you know, if there was like a medevac at final four, maybe that would happen. Or if somebody quit at final four, though I don't think that would happen in this game. But those are really the only two things that come to my mind at this point in time.
So just to talk this through, the idea of there being a tie at the final tribal council, while that's certainly possible, would that play out in Cambodia? Because Jeff tallies the votes in Los Angeles at the live finale, but you would think that production would know based on filming the footage. And they used to say, and even back from Survivor of the Amazon, that they used to, like, there was no camera person there when you did it. And honestly, I don't remember if there was a camera person there when you voted normally, but I think that they just like had, like, you know, they just said that they used to like just keep the tape running, and then they just would like check, make sure that the footage was there, and then they wouldn't even look at it until they got to the finale. And so I think that they probably must be checking that out, because I don't think that you would want the scenario, say it's like a 4-4-2 split in the final three. I think, however, that tie was going to be broken, you would want to do that in Cambodia. I just don't know necessarily what would happen in the actual episode where you do the vote reading back in Los Angeles. where then you say, okay, well, I could tell that it's a 4-4-2 vote. So we're going to have two people who didn't vote for the people that are in the winner spots. Then they're going to vote again. And then, okay, they both voted the same way. So now we have a definitive winner. We can't reveal who it is. But then, like, it seems like that would be very wonky to sort of play out in Cambodia.
Yeah, plus if, you know, those people did re-vote, then someone would ask them, okay, who did you initially vote for? And that person knows automatically, oh, I got third place. I mean, depending how the final tribal council goes, they might already know they got third place. But yeah, using those context clues in terms of the scenery, I think we sort of narrowed in here on it being all votes canceled out at one tribal council.
I think that's where most people have landed on this. Now, I thought that this was a pretty interesting thing that we stumbled onto, this idea of, hypothetically, if this turns into a 3-3 split at that first tribal council and we go to rocks, and then on top of it that we sort of have this sort of thinking of, okay, let's go to rocks. Sure, why not? And so if you put the votes on people that don't have the idols, potentially, then could you have, say it's end up just for the sake of simplicity, that the votes go from that Kimmy goes with Keith and Kelly and Spencer sticks with Jeremy and Tasha, and say that there's 3 votes Spencer, 3 votes Kimmy. Those votes cancel out. And hypothetically, if Kelly played her idol in this tribal council and also Jeremy played his idol at this tribal council, it would come down to that you could only vote for Tasha and you could only vote for Keith.
Yeah, that's just what we talked about before. It would be insane. It would be throwing all the mechanics of Survivor into one tribal council. And now that you talk about it, I realize maybe Kimmy shouldn't join up with Kelly and Keith, because I feel like that is a bad title for an alliance.
Yes, what's that title?
KKK.
Yeah,
I think that page in the Survivor Wiki might have a very interesting draw to
that's
it.
Regrettable. That would be regrettable.
Yeah, exactly. Savage looks at it, goes to Kelly. I didn't know you were in the KKK.
Yeah, and that they're voting against Jeremy and Tasha. The whole thing is just very, very, very bad.
Absolutely, it'll turn to Survivor Cook Islands all over again.
But that being said, So Kelly and Jeremy could still vote, even though they played their idol, and so that they would still be able to cast. So it would end up being then 2 votes for Keith, 2 votes for Tasha, and then what? Would they have to make fire?
Yeah.
Or the two of them would have to pick a rock.
Yeah, I guess it would just be only two people picking a rock, which would be, or maybe, you know, maybe the Survivor rules are only if 2 people are eligible to be eliminated, then we go to a fire-making competition, which again, would be crazy. But if that was, I mean, that would be one of the most insane tribal councils ever. You're talking about, like, there might be a boring tribal council in the finale. I feel like the next one would be the boring one then, because someone gets picked off. It's going to be 3-2. I have a feeling that the three we would stick together and vote off somebody from that minority.
I agree. I believe that for Kimmy, while you can argue that she's in that Sierra spot, it might make sense for her to go with the group of three. If she feels like she's number four, it would make sense for her to go with the Keith and Kelly side and then maybe force the rock draw, because she would probably be better off sitting in the final three with those other two. But for Spencer at that point, I think it would make more sense for Spencer to flip and then vote with the Keith and Kelly side to avoid potentially the rock draw. And I think then he would probably be okay. And then going into the final five, I think then he has more room to maneuver. So I think that Spencer would be the person who would be most likely be that person like the Suri, who would, hey, I don't want to get into a tie no matter what at final six. I'm going to go ahead and vote with the group that I feel like I might be number four in there, but I like would rather take my chances to move around than go into the rock draw at final six.
I think Spencer's best room right now is to get rid of Kimmy, because he can get into that Kathy position at the final five in Marquesas, where he's going to have the pair of Jeremy and Tasha and the pair of Kelly and Keith. And he basically gets to choose, okay, you know, eliminating any possibility of a rogue immunity win out of the way, I get to choose which pair I get to go to the end with. And that's when he's going to have like the most power he's ever had in the game.
While I agree that the best case scenario for Spencer would be to have Kimmy go out at final six, can you come up with the scenario where that makes sense? Like, how would he be able to pull that off?
I mean, he could try to make a similar pitch that Kimmy tried to make to this supposed women's alliance and say, like, you know, if Kimmy makes it to the end, she'll get the votes of all the women. And granted, you know, it's Keith and Jeremy, and they're not exactly the most, they're not the biggest team man woman haters around, but if he positions it in a certain way, he could certainly try to turn some tide against Kimmy a little bit. Or he could use the argument that Joe used in last episode and say, look, Kimmy is a... Abby Maria called Kimmy one of the biggest goats out there, apparently. Maybe he can make the same argument about Kimmy.
To me, it seems like they're in both the exact same spot. And maybe the only thing that one of them could do is sort of blow up their spot to the other two voting blocks and say, hey, this person is playing both sides, and maybe have sort of the Christy Smith thing happen where both sides turn against the person who's trying to be the swing vote. So that's the only scenario I could see where Spencer is able to get Kimmy out of the game.
Yeah, I could definitely see that happening.
So I don't think it's likely. I think that if we're going to see this tribal council where both the idols get played, I think it's going to be at five. I think that the thing that is probably the most straightforward is for Kimmy and Spencer, even though they both want to get rid of the other one, they probably don't want to force this rock draw at final six. And I think that the four would stick together and say, Keith is the person that's winning immunities. Let's get rid of Keith. And so you take Keith Nail out at six. And then going into final five, I think it's the last night that Kelly can play her idol. It's the last night that Jeremy would play her idol. It sort of forces the issue. And then it would just so happen that you have the side where the four, it's only Kelly. She's the only person that's left from that side. And so they're going to just go after Kelly, but she can play her idol. And Jeremy, it's the last night to play his idol. And I think you might get in a scenario where Kelly's one vote is for Jeremy. And then that alliance of four, they all voted for Kelly. And that's where you have the idol play.
I could definitely see that. But you think that, you know, in this huge post-merge game full of fluidity, you would think that this supreme we would want to stick together until the end?
I mean, at some point, it's like you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's almost like if it doesn't make sense to flip around, then it doesn't make sense. Where are you going?
It's so interesting, though, because I feel like in every other Survivor season, these are when the big moves are being made. You know, you yourself changed the face of the game at seven in your original season.
But we're at six. I feel like
people are making the big moves, though, at six, at five, sometimes even at four. We saw that in Marquesas a little bit.
Yeah, but that was a final two.
It's so interesting to me, though, that like the previous 5 or 6 weeks have been cuckoo bananas in terms of everyone shifting their allegiances around, and now everything is settling down. You know, that's not a typical post-merge to me.
Yeah. Well, that has to do with the final three, I think, more than anything. I think that once the final two became a final three, the final five became the final seven.
Yeah, it's very true. I think the final three definitely balloon things a lot more. You know, the final three, you just have to come to a consensus vote to determine who's in the final three. It's no longer a thing where one person chooses who to take to the end. That sort of changes the way the end game works a little bit.
Like the final five used to be the best vote in the whole season of the show, mm-hmm. because there would be two people who were like, okay, it's me and you, we're going to the end, but as long as we don't let these other three idiots know what's going on, then we'll be good. But now at the final five, it's like, hey, it's us three. As long as we just vote out these two idiots, we'll be good. And there's nothing that they can do about it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's no coincidence that I feel like since the final three has been instituted, there have been probably only a handful of final five votes that have been really that exciting, as opposed to in the old seasons. I feel like, as you said, it was really like a must watch episode.
Now, at the final five, what could ultimately end up happening, assuming Keith Nail goes out at six, you could see that maybe Kimmy is going to try to work with Kelly. But what are they going to do? They're going to recruit Spencer? I mean, I think that Spencer... does he wants to get rid of Kimmy, but maybe he would go and work with them, and maybe Spencer ultimately becomes the swing vote at final five, which would sort of also give him a bit of security because both sides would want to work with him. And that might even ensure even more that you're going to have one side voting for Jeremy and the other side voting for Kelly.
It's interesting because I feel like the Spencer-Kelly dynamic is really one of those. I talked before about how in such a strategic-based editing style, you leave a few things on the cutting room floor. And I feel like that's something that we really haven't seen since like episode 1 and 2. But we've seen a lot of Spencer and Jeremy. So while I do agree it would be really interesting, I don't know, something's telling me in my gut that Spencer's going to stick with Jeremy just because we've seen them form such a close bond.
Yeah, I don't see Spencer turning on Jeremy. I think that it'd be more likely that he's going to not want to go on the side with Kimmy, because what's he going to do? Vote out Jeremy and then go to the final four with the three women? Because what's going to happen to Spencer then? Don't you think Tasha is going to say like, hey, why don't we do the all women thing?
Yeah, it's very true, though. I mean, I guess Spencer would, at that point, would just hope to win out, which I guess he sort of hoped at in his previous season as well, and he sort of failed. So wouldn't that be the ultimate second chance, Rob? Spencer finds himself at the bottom once again at Final Four and ends up winning.
Yeah, that would be very exciting. All right, so let's take another voicemail. And speaking of the young lad winning immunity, let's take this email, which comes to us from our good buddy Morgan Stradling, wants to know about Spencer and how exactly he got that puzzle solved so quickly.
Hey, Rob and Mike, this is Morgan Stradling. Now, last night, Spencer was a puzzle master as he completed that super hard 5-piece puzzle in a matter of seconds. Now, was that due to his own natural puzzle ability? Or was he like some super fans who saw that solution posted on Reddit a few months before he left for Cambodia?
This is a very interesting question. We saw last night and Jeff was really impressed about all this, about like, wow, we've never had anybody. We tested this so many times. Nobody's ever been able to solve it this quickly. Wow, Spencer is really spectacular. So there's been some developments about this that have come out today. And why don't we start as we begin to unpack all of this? There was a secret scene where Spencer will tell us exactly how he pulled it off, because it's rather impressive how Spencer was able to solve that puzzle.
The challenge puzzle was one that you either know or you don't. You either see it or you don't see it. And it's very fickle, but once you get those first few cogs to turn, the rest falls into place. And I was just really lucky that the cogs turned really fast. I actually, as the enormous uncool survivor geek I am, memorized this puzzle. I was bored one day and I said, why not watch season 30 of Survivor for the fifth time? And I watched this challenge, the first challenge of season 30, and said, wow, you know, that 5-piece puzzle wasn't used. Nothing would stop Jeff from bringing it back someday. Why don't I just do it? Why not? And I memorized the puzzle, and it took a lot of self-control when Jeff said that that was the puzzle that was going to happen, not to just like start celebrating. It's like, I know what kind of puzzle that is. I know how based on getting it or not getting it, it is. And I know that if you've done it, you could probably get it in 10 seconds. And if you haven't, you're going to sit there and stare and feel dumb. And so the fact that I knew that puzzle, I felt really good.
Wow. So Spencer, what a Survivor nerd. He just sat there and said, hey, why don't I just watch Survivor Worlds Apart? It's so good. I'm going to watch it 5 times. And then just like he was struck by inspiration. Hey, that puzzle that I saw right there, they might use that again. So let me just go ahead and I'm going to study it. And he told Jeremy about this
5-piece puzzle. And Spencer, the nerd Spencer, he's such a nerd. He knew the puzzle. He memorized it from last season. Spencer memorized the puzzle from season 30, paused it on his TV, traced it on a piece of paper, cut it out, and did it himself. So right when Jeff said it's that puzzle, he said, I know it. And it took him 5 seconds to put it together. Like, I was in the lead, and I put a couple different things together, trying, and then he comes over and boom, 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 done. What a nerd. Such a nerd.
Wow. So what a nerd. Such a nerd.
Well, I'm sure Spencer didn't help the robot comparisons by talking about the cogs that were working in his head either.
Such a nerd. Oh.
I feel like that's the Jeremy I want to see on the TV. You know, I actually do, and I don't want to go on a tangent too much. I do feel like Jeremy's edit has been neutered a bit from the way he was in San Juan del Sur.
Hold that thought.
Hold that thought. That thought's held.
Okay. So Morgan also mentioned about how people talked about how, and I remember seeing this on the Survivor Reddit, how there was like a whole thread about how that, you know, here's how to solve all this. And so that was out there. But then a very interesting development from the great Colin Stone, half of the podcast team behind the Dom and Colin podcast, which is always a recommend if you're into the Survivor strategy, which many of us are. He tweeted today at Colin Stone, first a quote from the great Tom Haverford, who says, behind every great man is me smiling and taking partial credit. And he posts a screenshot, which looks to be from Facebook it looks like it's from Facebook.
Facebook, yeah.
So he says, apparently in a conversation with Spencer, you may want to consider studying that 5 and 10 piece puzzles from the premiere, since they didn't change the tree puzzle at all, and the 5-piece puzzle went untouched, so they'd likely use that in the future if they need another 5-piece puzzle.
Deep Stone is at work.
And then Spencer responds, damn, good thinking.
Oh, boy. Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like even though it's a secret scene, I feel like Spencer couldn't name drop Colin Stone, right? As great as he is in the Survivor community, I feel like he's not big enough to earn a name drop on the show. So the producers had to be like, wait, Spencer, say that you did it. It's going to sound much better that way. You sound much more like a nerd.
So do you think, is Spencer, is he almost a bit like the at the fat Jew here? Is he taking credit for the work of Colin Stone?
I mean, I think his hand was a little forced. I don't think he could say, you know, Colin Stone told me to do this, or a person told me to do this. I feel like Spencer's been very smart in terms of he's been totally working the cameras this season. And I feel like if if I make the story that I'm the nerd and I'm fitting this archetype and I did this, then it's going to treat the story a lot more. So he thought, I'm going to do it. But to be fair, that sort of shuns Colin a little bit in that he definitely, even though the dates are sort of blacked out with weird Microsoft Paint work, Colin was the one that told him to do it.
Why do you have to knock Colin's paint work?
I mean, I'm not great at paint either, but I mean, it's a little haphazard.
Yeah, it does seem like he could have just cut off a little Photoshop action.
Yeah, or put like fun pictures over the impertinent information.
Yeah.
Also, wouldn't the date have helped his case?
Yeah, you would think so. You think the date would have helped his case. But that being said, I mean, you would think that Spencer would acknowledge this if this was true. Maybe a retweet.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, you know, Spencer has suffered from retweets before, and I think he still owes money from Super Bowl bets. So maybe he's a little untrigger happy with his thumb this time.
Yeah. So do you think, is this contested in some way? Do you think that Spencer is disputing the fact that Colin gave him this hot tip?
Well, I mean, he has been disputing people as of late. Let's remember that conversation that him and Steven had a couple weeks ago about what constitutes their friendship.
Yeah, maybe Spencer is going to say that. I've only listened to Dom and Colin like one time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, who are you? I don't even know who you are.
So this is very, very interesting to me. A little bit of a controversy.
Yeah, absolutely. Spencer is burning a lot of bridges on social media as well, apparently.
Yeah, I really am very interested in the genesis of, did Spencer actually cut out the pieces? Did he go on Reddit? What is the story?
Now I wonder if future contestants go on and they use unused puzzles. Are they going to credit Spencer for it? And will Spencer get angry at them for copying his strategy and not giving him credit?
Well, I think that if there's ever a point where there's something that goes unused, but I mean, it would be such a Survivor rarity. The puzzles that didn't get put together in that season, I mean, I don't think that there was anything this season where there was like a thing behind a certain door and somebody didn't open it. But it is a good thing to sort of just like mark down if that situation ever comes up again.
Yeah, I feel like that was interesting too, the genesis of like, let's use that puzzle. I feel like Kierhofer was like, crap, we need something. We don't just want to have them running around boats and breaking their bones. Yeah, that puzzle. Quick, just paint those puzzle pieces. We'll throw them in at the end of the challenge.
Well, I think that they were probably excited about it. And they're like, oh, damn, we didn't get to use it.
Yeah. Well, I like how Jeff, you know, even the props this season are getting second chances on Survivor.
Which leads us into our next question from Dylan.
Hey, Rob, Dylan from Alberta calling. That 5-piece puzzle we saw, it didn't even get past the schoolyard pick its first season and didn't get very far this season. However, Props loves it, and maybe it's got some surprising depth behind it. So do you think it'll make it into Survivor, third time's a charm? Thanks.
Okay. Could the puzzle, what do you think of the story of the puzzle? Okay. It was like Wanda and Jonathan the first time around. And then the second time around, it was like, it was out so quick. But do you think, could the puzzle have life a third time around?
I want to have a Survivor season where it's all new players, but two tribes led by Francesca and the puzzle. And Francesca still gets voted off first.
Well, I mean, the puzzle is going to be, you know, you definitely want to take that. That's a great goat, the puzzle.
And you can lean on it for support. You can build the shelter out of the puzzle. So I feel like the puzzle has a lot of use around camp.
Yeah. Who's the loved one for the puzzle? The 10-piece puzzle?
Yeah, exactly. Or no, the 10-piece puzzle couldn't come out, so the 25-piece puzzle comes out and says,
50.
When it got taken apart, dude. I just thought my 10 piece would make it.
Has to get medevac because it loses one of the pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Or someone gets medevac for getting a splinter in one of those challenges where you have to wrestle each other. I can't believe we got to the point where we're talking about a sentient puzzle competing on Survivor.
Or would the loved one for the puzzle be Spencer?
I could solve you in 5 seconds. You're mine now. I love you.
Puzzle, let's bring out your loved one, Spencer. And then there could be a whole storyline about how Spencer never told the puzzle, I'll solve you.
Yeah, absolutely. And then they'll finally admit it to each other right there on the field, and tears will be streaming down everyone's faces.
Oh, snap.
Oh, Jigsaw. And then the puzzle wins. We hear Jeff say, unbelievable, the first time in Survivor history an inanimate object has won the $1 million check. It's a mockery to the game of Survivor. Good night, everyone. We are not coming back.
What a nerd. Such a nerd.
So the puzzle runs out to the audience, and Spencer just starts solving it in love.
The puzzle have like a winner montage, and then like at the finale, like, and the winner of Survivor. What's the name of the season?
Oh, God. It's got to be called, I don't know, First Out, Last Out, question mark.
Like, how did this happen? It was just a 5-piece puzzle that was solved in 10 seconds and somehow has come back and won the game on a third time.
We thought this was a joke, but literally the impossible has become possible.
We'll hear from the puzzle. We'll talk to Spencer, and Francesca's here too. Stick around. For the final Survivor reunion show of all time.
And we're canceled.
All right. Too much time on the puzzle. Okay. Let's.
Yeah, Spencer would have spent like 5 seconds on that segment.
Yeah, Spencer would have gotten through that much quicker. Okay. So then let's get to a question, which we teased a little bit about the overall storyline of this season. And let's take a question from your buddy, your fellow historian, Paul.
Hey, Mike and Rob. It's Paul Oslison, a.k.a. the Mike Bloom that sucks. Although most people, including me, have been super high on this season, one of the largest complaints I've been hearing is in regards to the overall narrative of the season. Many have found the season story to be inconsistent and at times unsatisfying. Things such as the Savage-Steven rivalry, the Kimmy-Steven bond, and the character of Kelly Wigglesworth come to mind. But what is the best case scenario for the finale in terms of this season's story? What would you guys say are some of the best outcomes that these final six can have that would leave us super happy with the story arc for season 31? Thanks, and keep working hard and playing hard.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul.
I have a friendship bracelet to give Paul now that he left that lovely voicemail.
That was very nice. So, Mike Bloom, let's talk about this in terms of the overall storyline of this season.
Should we get our leopard print fedoras on and do our best penners?
All right. I want to know, what is the best story of this season? You've got all these second chancers coming back. Redemption, that should be good. But is the whole as good as the sum of the parts?
I mean, it's a good question. I mean, I think overall, I don't speak on behalf of the community, but I feel like the majority would say the best outcome would be a final three of Kelly, Jeremy, and Spencer. I think that out of the final six that we have, those three have had probably the biggest edits and most consistent edits throughout the entire season. I mean, I'm pretty sure there might be, and I might be fudging the numbers here, but I'm pretty sure there's a fact out there that like some combination of those three have had a confessional in every single episode. So it's not like they've disappeared for stretches of time. They're three of the only people who have always been active at all times. So I feel like that is the be all end all best possible outcome for this season.
What is the story? We have different seasons where there's one person's story that comes through. I mean, what would be the story of this season?
I mean, I feel like it's been shoved down our throat, second chance, second chance, second chance. And I feel like all three of those people have embodied the theme of second chance in some sort of way, shape, or form. I mean, Jeremy, he talked a lot about how like I was considered a threat my first time out and I was voted out, so I want to play a lot more cautious and behind the scenes. He's been able to do that really well to the point of where everyone's treating him very amicably and nobody wants to really target him right now. Spencer was a perennial underdog, constantly playing from the bottom, which he just called in this episode demoralizing. This time he was able to, even though he's he squirmed his way out of a few votes, he was able to find himself in the majority and even was able to make his own move against Steven. And Kelly was really the most blank slate coming in. It was almost like 19 returning players and Kelly Wentworth, this person that we haven't really seen play the game before. And so she was able to redeem her own first impression by saying, I can play this game and I can play it hard.
So you feel like those are the only three narratives that would make sense for the story of this season?
Yeah. So in terms of like going around the theme of second chance, absolutely. I mean, I think Keith is, you know, he always has the Keith storyline of like, here's this sort of, you know, here's this sort of old Southern gentleman who just is the funniest guy. And he's able to sort of not necessarily charm, but sort of surprise everyone and make his way to the finals and he'll win. I feel like Tasha is not winning at this point. I feel like she sort of had a little bit of a pre-merge edit syndrome where she was really active for the PMES? A4 stuff. She had traces of PMES. Luckily, it went away after a visit to the editor doctor. But because she was very rampant in the Anchor stuff, and then she disappeared for a good while and then really, really reappeared for these past couple episodes. But I feel like this past episode did not paint her in the best light, specifically compared to those other three. And Kimmy, as we talked about before, she's that chicken pecking around in the background. And I feel like Chicken is not making his way to the end this time, even on a second chance. Yeah. Damn.
So which of those three stories do you think would be the best story?
That's a really subjective question. I mean, I think it's got to be Spencer or Jeremy, just because even though Kelly, I think she definitely surprised me. I mean, when we did the roundtable stuff going into second chances, I really liked her on social media, but I was saying, you know, I don't think she has anything on her resume, and so it's tough to really have a case to vote her in. But I think she's definitely impressed in that way. But Jeremy and Spencer both made an impact on their original seasons, and so it has a much better story to compare the two. And so I think, I mean, we see a lot of confessionals from Spencer almost every episode about how much he's changed in this game and what this journey has had an effect on him. So I feel like Spencer out of the two would be the better story overall.
The young lad grows up. The young lad becomes the young man.
Yes, the we becomes the giant.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most clearly defined story. And I think that the Jeremy thing is sort of easy to wrap your head around, where he was the guy that nobody wanted to take him to the end the first time around. And then he's able, because he is this guy who's a firefighter and a family man. And, you know, he's such a likable person that people like talked about. I don't know how for the average viewer of the show, if they remember that stuff from San Juan del Sur, but I think for Jeremy, you know, all the times that he was sort of emotional about his family, I think that that's a pretty clear storyline. But I'm actually very curious about the Kelly side of things, because to me, and I think that to a lot of the people that are sort of in this, you know, Survivor podcast world who saw Kelly, who a year ago was just such a Survivor afterthought, of somebody who was, okay, she was a pre-merge boot in a season that was not really beloved. What chance did she have to really, you know, be in this position that she's in right now, exactly 1 year ago? But to the, and I hate to use the C word because it's taken on such a negative
family
connotation.
Family podcast, Rob. Family podcast.
No, I'm talking about casual.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean for the misdirect was unintentional. But so, for the average person who is watching the show, who's not in our universe of that has seen Kelly be so ubiquitous in the Survivor internet world, it's like, I really wonder if they would be satisfied with that outcome in terms of like what they've seen from her just from this season, because I'm sure that they don't really remember her from San Juan del Sur. I'm sure she came into this season with a little bit of like, who is that again?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't help that she also angered a lot of the casual fan base last episode by getting rid of Joe, too. So I think she's on a lot of people's S's list at that point. But I agree. And I think that, I mean, in terms of a metagame perspective, if she did win, it would definitely continue this sort of stigma that's been held over all returning player seasons, where on paper, the person that would probably be least qualified to make the cast ends up winning the season.
Because I actually, you know, really like that story. And, you know, I certainly do relate to that sort of underdog story, because I do feel like I walk through life going through that. I feel like people are just looking at me, who are you? Why are you here? Go away. And I kind of feel like that is sort of the story of Kelly Wentworth and Survivor.
Yeah. I mean, and I think she's definitely shown her resilience. I mean, I would almost, I don't want to make a one-to-one comparison of Kelly here and Spencer in Cagayan, but I feel like her post-merge game has almost been very similar in that she found herself in the bottom from the get-go at the post-merge, and she's been able to make her way to the top of a couple of votes, but it seems like every other vote she's been thrown back to the bottom again.
I do think, though, that if the story of this season is going to be a Kelly win, I do wonder if maybe the best moments are yet to come also.
Well, we also haven't got, I mean, and I know Survivor editing has been a little wonky the past couple seasons with Natalie and with Tony's win, but I feel like we haven't gotten those, that typical winner confessional of like, you know, I'm doing this for my family, or like, you know, I'm feeling really emotional out here. Kelly really hasn't shown that many sad emotions out there, you know, considering her, one of her most famous sound drops here, she seems rather gleeful at just playing the game, which is great. But you don't have these confessionals about, like, you know, Spencer saying, I never really showed emotion before, or Jeremy crying at the thought of, you know, another child of his coming into the world and the possibility of having another $1 million to help raise it. It just, that doesn't really fit into the equation as of yet.
Let's keep going. And this is a question sort of that fits in with this overall theme of the season. And let's check in with our buddy Ron from Toronto.
Hi, Rockin' Robin, Mixmaster Mike. It's Ron from Toronto. Regardless of what happens next Wednesday, true or false, Survivor Second Chances is one of the top three seasons of all time. Take care.
Top three, baby.
Oh, well, first of all, I'm glad I've been upgraded from nicknames from Master Mike to Mix Master Mike. Can't wait for Mingle Mix Master Mike next.
God forbid. God forbid.
God forbid. Then I'd be, that's if I go into the Big Brother house. Wear a banana suit. Yeah. I mean, this might be a little controversial, but in my opinion,
Set this up a little bit. So Dalton Ross, that always controversial, he releases his season rankings, and he always does it here, which I feel like is a little bit of a weird spot because you don't really know how it ends. And sometimes he moves it up or down a peg after the finale. So he released it, and he put this season overall of the 31 seasons at, you know,
number eight, which is, I mean, pretty good. And it's weird considering that, like, you know, him and Probst have been hyping this season so much that you would think it's in the top three. But he talks about his big two demerits here are, as Paul was just talking about, how because we're sort of going with voting block surprise editing here, there's a lot of storylines that I feel like are left confusing. And also he felt the challenges were boring for a good stretch of time. And those are sort of the demerits against it.
What do you think, Mike? Would you have that? Let's just go from the Dalton Ross number, which is eight. Would you have the season higher or lower than eight?
I would probably have it lower at the moment, but not by much. And again, as you just said, I feel like Survivor season rankings are so results oriented. I feel like whenever you talk to people, they say like, well, I like this season because this person won, or I don't like this season because this person didn't win or this person won. So I feel like a lot of people's opinions on the season are going to be very dependent on how that ends. And, you know, I feel like if this so happens to, as Tasha outlined, is the worst case scenario this episode, if someone like Kelly or Keith or Kimmy does win the game, I feel like it might take a couple hits to it. Right now, I would say it's probably nestled inside my top 10, but I won't go top five, baby, just yet.
Yeah, for me, the way that I sort of do these season rankings is like, I just sort of like go by episode, and I try to see like, okay, the people that I really want to go back and watch. And then the biggest thing for me is like, how many episodes are there that if I had to rewatch the season, that they would just be total like, oh, this episode, I got to get through this episode, I feel like probably in the pre-merge, even though Jeff Varner is very fun, I feel like that like second episode after the three tribe thing is probably a bit of a drag. And I feel kind of feel like even like the Monica episode is also probably a bit of a drag. So I feel like that the pre-merge, I think, sort of stalls out for a little bit after they go to three tribes. But then I feel like then once they get back to two, I think that's really exciting. And I think this season had a very long merge bump. Going from the cast boot through the boot of Steven. I feel like the last two episodes, probably last week more so than this one, have just been sort of so-so. So I think that definitely it's in the top 10, but I think the top three is probably a little high. But, you know, there's still three more tribal councils and the final tribal council to go.
Yeah.
I do think that there's a lot of variance that's in play here for this season. Like, I think it could potentially, if the finale is just like off the charts, I think you could get to top five, baby.
Yeah. I could definitely think that. I mean, I think, again, we're looking at this from different angles. I think you're looking at it from a more episodic angle. And I think that's kind of how the show is editing things nowadays. But whereas I'd like to look at it more from like an overarching angle of like, if I try to binge this season, and I think this season is going to be very interesting to binge on a rewatch, because there are even more so, I feel like they started doing this sort of in season 11, but even more so these days of like, well, let's just find these three stories and put them into this one episode. You know, it's hard, except for those three people that we just talked about a few minutes ago. It's tough to find these really big storylines for people. And that's tough and obviously, you know, they're giving you ample material since they're all returning players, but it feels like, you know, if you're editing episode by episode, I feel like that to me, it takes on a lesser value than trying to, you know, edit an overall story about an entire season. And again, not to say that this season has not been great. I've been loving it. But that being said, some of my top seasons are the ones that still have these fantastic moments, but do have these overarching storylines as well.
Well, it sounds to me like you almost want Survivor to edit for the binge. And unfortunately, you know, it's such a week-to-week game in terms of production, in terms of like the ratings and stuff like that. You know, I think that Survivor, and I can't fault them for it, definitely does edit for the episode rather than the binge.
No, I could definitely see that. And yeah, maybe it's one of those things of like maybe Survivor is not a series that's meant to be binged. You know, maybe, you know, there's so much that it can be absorbed from the fact of talking about this stuff in the days between the week. And, you know, maybe, and you and I have even talked on podcasts about it, how some seasons are better to binge than others, where you get to see everything laid out in front of you. Some seasons actually improve on the reputation, whereas others fall.
We're both in agreement, not a top three season in the conversation to go up, certainly, in this final episode, especially if, you know, the finale can deliver on the hype.
Absolutely. And if they bring that puzzle back.
If the puzzle comes back. Well, the puzzle comes back in its own season.
Yeah, but if they bring it out at the reunion.
Oh, but Mike, what if the puzzle comes back in season 32? Because nobody would have seen Spencer solve it so quickly.
Oh my God, this is the first reverse returning player that we've ever had.
That being said, though, they wouldn't have known in season 32 that Spencer would solve it so quickly in season 31.
No, for all we know, they could have been somebody on that season who also did the, if Colin Stone informed that person as well, if he has deep roots in the spoiled Survivor community.
Who knows? Oh, there's so much intrigue heading into season 32. Are you ready? Are you prepared to be in the lead up to season 32 yet? We're 6 days away, baby.
I mean, it's going to be weird too, because I mean, we look at these seasons like Survivor Vanuatu and Survivor Nicaragua, both kind of took a hit in terms of the reputation at the time because they followed these big epic returning player seasons. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens on 32 and whether, even if it's a good season and people will be like, man, Cambodia was just so fantastic. You know, what is this season 32 about? I don't need to care about it. Remember when Stevie got blindsided? That was just so great.
Yeah. The season 32 hangover could be a thing, but we'll talk about that more in the off season. The one thing, the saving grace, I think, for us is that I think that the season 32 podcasts should be off the charts.
I would definitely agree. I think there are certain things that might be happening on this season that will bring in a wide variety of new faces and voices, possibly, to what's been going on in Survivor.
Okay, so let's take a question. This is Nathan from New Zealand, and he has a question for us about going back to Survivor San Juan del Sur.
Hi, Rob and Mike. It's Nathan calling from New Zealand. And as it was mentioned in the episode, three members from the original Hunapu tribe are now in the final of the season of Survivor. And we add that to the stats from Hunapu's original season, which include having the winner, three of the final four, and winning every immunity challenge besides the one they threw. The Hunapu tribe is looking pretty good. So I'm wondering, where do you think Hunapu belong in the pantheon of great Survivor tribes? And what other Survivor tribes from Survivor do you think belong there? Obviously, Karor from Palau and maybe the Villains tribe. Are there any others that we should be considering? Love to hear your thoughts.
Wow, Mike. So this is really heady stuff here. Do we need to be talking about the original Hunapu tribe as one of the greatest Survivor tribes of all time?
I guess, if we're results oriented, we have to, right? I mean,
forget results oriented. Okay. Let's just talk about it, even just from a character point of view.
Oh, character point of view. I mean, you know, I'm very high on San Juan del Sur to begin with. So I would definitely put it there. I mean, I don't know if it's Kasaya in my mind is, aside from, like, you know, probably the Villains tribe, like one of the most entertaining tribes in the world. So I feel like It's not exactly at that level, but it's pretty up there.
Well, see, that's a little tricky because Kasaya is a post-swap tribe, even though the swap happens in the second episode. But if you're going to do a one-for-one, so let me give you the members of the Hunapu tribe. Let's just give you the rundown to see who we're talking about it, okay?
Because I'm assuming people just deleted San Juan del Sur from their memory, so this is a good reminder to them as well.
So I'm just going to give you them in the order that they leave the game.
Okay.
All right. You have Drew Christie. All right, that is one hell of a start.
One for one, yeah.
You have Kelly Wentworth, who you might not even remember that she was there.
Sneaky, sneaky.
But one of the major players this season, so you kind of have to give him partial credit for that.
All right. All right, here you go. You're going to get a demerit here. You got Julie McGee. Quits McGee is here.
Oh, yeah. That's the black spot on the Hunapu tribe.
Yep.
She's the black sheep of the tribe.
That, at this point, that's the elephant in the room right now in this conversation.
Did you have too much trail mix?
You have Jeremy Collins.
Hey.
Oh, snap.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good. Looking good so far.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You have Reed Kelly.
Definitely. He definitely had an impact on the season. Became a big character at the end, though. Possibly for controversial reasons.
You have John Mish.
He was like golden boy for a little while.
Yeah. Remember when Steven was obsessed with John Mish?
Remember when he lost the knowingest know-it-all because of his love for John Mish?
I remember it well. You have Keith Nail.
Perfect.
You have Missy.
Oh, man. She just showed up.
she just showed
up to this perfect tribe.
She just showed up.
And we'll just show up.
You also have the winner of the season, Natalie Anderson.
Yeah.
Come on, Twinny, let's go.
I don't think it's a coincidence that this tribe ended up winning three of the first four immunity challenges before the swap. I feel like they were just such a strong tribe of both personalities and physicalities.
Now again,
as well.
Another sort of black spot on this tribe is they ate all their rice, they lost their flint, they tried to trade their tarps away to get stuff. So I don't know if you could really say that they are the greatest collective group. But really, if we're just looking at a collection of a tribe, like, this is got to be in that conversation.
No, I would actually put points in their favor for doing that. I mean, I'm trying to think about, so we're looking at like original tribes here. Let's look back in Survivor history. I mean, I feel that, I mean, like the Fei Long tribe in China, I really enjoyed. I feel like that was a really fun one. I'm trying to think of other ones.
Yeah.
I mean,
are you disqualifying Kasaya, or are you saying that it's close enough to be in the season?
You disqualified Kasaya for me by saying it was post swap, so that's taken out of the equation.
I mean, we can count. I'll allow it.
Okay.
I mean, you do have a couple of people. You do have the Melinda thing there. I mean, if you want to get a mulligan on Melinda for the Quits McGee thing.
Yeah, I'll pull my Melinda again out. I would say Yasser, the women's tribe from Survivor Vanuatu's a pretty great tribe. What about the Drake?
The Drake. Love the Drake.
Love the Drake. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you gotta love the Drake.
Yeah, so you got there. I feel like they're up there too. So now that like we're listing out more and more, I feel like Samburu from Africa is a pretty fun one too. So Pagong is another great one. So I mean, I would put Hunapu out there, but I don't know if I would call it like in the greatest. I wouldn't put it in the pantheon just yet.
I don't know. It's in the conversation. It's in the conversation.
I would definitely say so.
And so the legacy could even continue to build in this finale. And that is exactly what Justin in Reno wants to ask us about.
Hey, Rob and Mike. Justin from Reno here. My question is about the possibility of the Hunapu 3 making the final. It is clearly 4-2 right now with Kelly and Keith as the odd ones out. If Keith wins immunity, it would seemingly force Kelly to play her idol and make the four vote for one of their own, and it seems unavoidable that someone would have her feelings. Wouldn't Jeremy feel the need to ensure his spot in the final five by using his idol, and wouldn't he want to team up with Kelly and Keith after he inevitably gets some votes put on him? Couldn't the Hunapu 3 then roll the final three together? You see this as being a possibility or just fan fiction? Love to hear you guys' thoughts.
Okay, so Justin interjects an interesting scenario where Keith wins immunity at 6, forcing Kelly to play her idol at 5, and then maybe the wheels start to come off of that, you know, original Bion plus Spencer 4.
Do you have the sound drop ready, Rob? Because I'm ready to call it the latter.
Fan fiction.
I'm like a storyteller. That's what I do.
But in terms of the Penner storytelling of it all, we did have that moment last night where they did acknowledge it, and it does feel like on Survivor for them to shine a spotlight on, hey, all the Hunapu people are still here, if that is going to be a red herring.
Unless it's an all returning player season that they've acknowledged their deep history in, specifically with, you know, with bringing in these old school players, and they just decide to throw that in there for the hardcore fans. I don't know. The main factor that's really impeding me from this theory becoming a reality is the fact that Jeremy and Keith just seem like they're in such opposition at this point. Again, I'll point out the fact that as soon as Keith made this final three alliance with Spencer and Kelly, he said, well, we're getting rid of Jeremy first. I feel like Keith is not going to let Jeremy out of his sights at this point.
Yeah, but Jeremy has that idol.
That's true, but I think even if he plays the idol, then Keith won't be like, oh, all right, well, now it's time to join up with you again. Now that I declawed this cat, now I'm going to domesticate him.
Right. It's almost like no scenario where they would be willingly bringing the others to that group where, you know, you say, oh, well, what if Jeremy wins out and keeps winning immunities and you think that Keith would get voted off? And if Keith keeps winning out, you would think that Keith and Kelly would vote Jeremy off at some point.
Yeah, they're not going to be strange bedfellows at this point. They are sleeping in separate beds.
Right. But, you know, if they could somehow get to final five, all of them, get the final four, all of them. And you got to get a winner from this season from that group also to help the previous point.
Yeah, absolutely. Which, I mean, I'm all for anything that improves San Juan del Sur's reputation, but I don't know. It'll be a tough road to get all three of them there to the end.
So we've talked about the Hunapu tribe. We've talked about the chances of the Keith, Jeremy, Kelly final three, the Hunapu final three. But let's drill down a little bit further. We went from tribe, we went to that final three. But what about just in terms of Keith Nail? Let's take a question from one of our listeners. Here's Big D.
Hey, Rob. It's Big D calling in. I just want to know what kind of chance my husband has at winning a game. Is it better than 0.0% that Spencer has? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks, Big D.
All right. Is there any chance that Big D and Wes are going to be pumped up finale night, that the winner of Survivor Cambodia is Keith Nail?
First of all, Big D sounds like a sick Muppet. Like, go home, Big D. You're a little sick. You don't need to come in and do the show tonight. Just like there was in San Juan del Sur, there's a chance that Keith could possibly, you know, get through a couple of votes and win his way into the finals. However, I find it pretty unlikely. Yeah.
I mean, what are the chances of Keith in the final tribal council where somebody is like, Keith, I want to know, when we got voted in by America, I want you to tell me, why do you deserve to win this game that we've all been here before? We've all lost. We all came out here with the idea that one of us was going to be redeemed. Why should it be you, Keith?
No real logic.
Yes.
I'm still flashing back to when we got to go. And I look at Jeremy. He's, you know, he's married 12, 15 years. Him and Val solid. I can't even think of her name from more. Tasha.
Nominal aphasia. Brief bout of that for Keith. Oh boy. Okay, can I start a movement? Actually, guys out there, we need to get Keith Nail into the Mr. Survivor debates. Can you imagine what he's gonna do?
I do think he had a good shot in San Juan del Sur. I don't think this is his season.
No, not at all, because I mean, we can, and I'm sure we'll talk even more about Tasha's whole meta pitch to Spencer about, you know, it'd be a disservice to this season if we let someone like Keith win. But the fact is, these players seem very set on voting someone based on game merit over something just as pure likability, whereas that's something that you probably wouldn't find in a newer player season where people are just getting to know each other for the first time, and Keith's just that really entertaining guy out there. So I feel like he stands less of a chance here as well, even though he's sort of trying to play a little bit more of a strategic game, but even he admits, like, I'm not cut out for that part of the game.
You know, while we're on the Keith Nail thing, I ended up pulling some clips. You know, I talked about this last night on the Know It Alls, but it kind of irked me when Keith talked about how it was so unlikely for him to be at the Cambodian temple. Here's Keith last night on the episode.
If people would have asked me, you know, hey, where's Keith been for the last 30 days? Is he sitting in a temple in Cambodia, or is he just get off the shuttle back from Mars? Well, they said, well, he just got back from Mars, because he damn sure ain't in Cambodia.
And now, I had said last night that I thought that, well, I thought most people would think that would be pretty likely, that Keith Nail would be in Cambodia, considering that he was up for this big Survivor Second Chance thing. But Keith Nail said, yeah, that would be so unlikely that he would be sooner back from Mars than going to a temple in Cambodia.
That would, the only way that would happen is if real life replicated The Simpsons once again and they decided to send an everyman out into space and Keith Nail won the contest.
Now, Mike, last year, a year ago this week, and where's Jordan Kalish? You know, Keith Nail came in fourth in Survivor San Juan del Sur. And they went to the live show. It was Jeff Probst was live in the audience and said, he set up this clip where here's Keith Nail. Right after he came out of the game, Jeff Probst went to him and interviewed Keith Nail immediately after coming out of the game.
You go back home and your buddies say, tell me what it was like. How do you explain this experience?
Who would have thought I'd be sitting in a spa in Nicaragua? If you would ask me, is Keith coming back from the moon or is he sitting in Nicaragua having a spa? They'd say I'd be coming back from the moon.
Boy. Okay, so let's figure this out then, because Keith purely, he has this sort of analogous way of determining things. So if spa in Nicaragua is the moon and Cambodian temple is Mars, let's say the Great Wall of China is Jupiter. I guess then we'll make the bottom of the Mariana Trench. That'll probably be something like Neptune. Right.
So, Mike, let me just rephrase this question then that Big D wanted to know. If I told you Keith Nail was more likely to board the International Space Station next week or win Survivor Second Chance, which would you think?
God help the team aboard the International Space Shuttle.
You know, Mike, time is a flat circle, okay?
Oh my God. Like, I just, that would be, I mean, I feel like he'd be perfect to have aboard, but I feel like it's like, oh, Keith, our oxygen levels are running low. Well, hold on. Yeah. Let me just feel like there's a switch here I should probably press. And then, well, the problem though is, Keith would spit so much that it would be floating around in the air and clouding everyone's vision. Yeah, exactly. Zero gravity spit.
Now, hold on, Mike. I guess we should just stick to the launch plan.
Stop laughing, Keith. We're going to die.
Hey.
As long as you keep burping, I guess you're okay.
Yeah. So one day, Keith Nail will fulfill his destiny and reach outer space.
Yes, absolutely. And then we talked about him playing out the plot of The Martian. I feel like his journey will mimic more the plot of Gravity than it will the plot of The Martian, where he has to figure out how to get back to Earth.
Yeah, do you think that Keith wanted to be an alien? Why is he so obsessed with space?
Well, maybe he gets into this perilous situation, and the one thing that he has to do to get the launch pad, or to get the capsule back to Earth, is roll a ball down a path into a certain hole. And once it lands in that hole, the capsule will release and he gets back to Earth safely.
Yes, I love that. That's sort of like,
and we have all these flashbacks of like, or like, you have to throw all the bad wiring off of the table so that it's clear to work on.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's really a strong way to go.
Then he like, say like Slumdog Millionaires it.
Yeah, in Apollo 13. That's a stretch. That's a stretch.
That's a bit of a stretch, but I love it. Can the puzzle be the Houston operator?
Yes. Okay. So with Keith in mind, let's take a question from one of our longtime listeners. Let's take a question from Muffin.
Hey, Rob. This is Muffin. And here's what I think. I love Keith Nail on my television as much as the next guy. But is being well-liked and good at challenges really enough to win these days? As the game evolves, will we ever see another non-strategic player win? Would love to hear your thoughts. Bye.
Okay, so forget Keith Nail, but could a Fabio type, somebody who was just likable and won challenges, could that person still win in the modern game?
First off, Muffin sounds like she got younger by like 30 years from that voicemail.
What does Muffin think, though?
Like, who's Muffin? Yeah, It's not missing.
She stepped in the Fountain of Youth. So, not for a returning player season. I feel like, say what you want to about Amber and Sandra's games, but I feel like they still had some strategic merit to them. I feel like in a new player season, I feel like people are more likely to say, I'm going to vote for the person I liked out there, which is how you got the Bob the win and how you got the Fabio win as well. In a returning player season, unless you bring two of the most vile people you can to the end, that's not going to happen.
I think that this person could win. I agree with what you're saying, because we always talk about how Wu made such a dumb move because he didn't take Cass to the end, and that Wu, if he would have taken Cass to the end, he would have won against Cass. That would be exactly Wu. I believe that Cass even said to Wu in the finale of that season, you would be like the Fabio up there if you went up against me. People liked you. You won some challenges. And so I do agree. I think that a person who is likable, who one challenge is could win in the final two or three.
Yeah, absolutely. And even at that point, like, all you need to do is just be likable and be enough of a medium on the totem pole. And when you get down to the final four or three, you only need to win a couple challenges and then you're there. So I feel like it's a very easy path to ride out. And then it's who you're up against as well. Some people might ride that path and be up against a more strategic powerhouse and get lambasted for riding coattails. But if you're sitting next to somebody that everyone is universally hating on, you've got a $1 million check written for you.
Yeah, we said Keith Nail could have won in Survivor San Juan del Sur, especially because at the final four, if he wins immunity, maybe Natalie gets voted out. If it's Keith versus Jacqueline versus Missy, guess what? Keith's probably going to win San Juan del Sur.
Yeah, I wonder if there's such a thing as like intentional Fabioing, where you get the rest of your alliance, or I guess Dietzing, if you will, where you get the rest of your alliance voted out, and then you end up almost winning your way. Terry almost did it, but you end up winning your way to the end. All your friends are on the jury. You're going to get votes from them no matter what.
All right. So, Mike, this is a question which is going to lead to something that's very fun. Let's jump into a question from Pat.
Hey, Rob and Mike. This is Pat calling a question regarding everyone's favorite finale reunion game. How many people from the Cambodia cast will not be asked the question during the reunion? Who from the season do you think will not get addressed? Adios, bro, chachos.
All right, let's start it up, Mike. A new tradition, a new Rob as a podcast game, courtesy of Pat. Here, what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's play the who will not get a question ignored at the reunion Survivor Karamoan pre-merge memorial draft.
I think you need to work on that name. Let's play who got snubbed.
Yeah, okay. Let's name it. First, okay. In honor of the PMES, let's name it after somebody from the Survivor Karamoan pre-merge.
Julia?
Julia. The Julia Landauer Memorial.
Yeah, now it sounds like she died in a race car accident.
Yeah, yeah, that guy, you know what? That she has a dangerous profession. Why don't we name it like the like after Matt Bischoff or something?
Yes.
Okay, the Bishies. Let's hand out the Bishies.
Let's hand out the Bishies. If you do not want to see your name tonight on the Bishies, because that means you will not be talked to at the reunion.
Okay. Here's how I want to play this game, Mike. Okay, so this is going to be a 3-round draft. Okay, I'll allow you to go first, but then it's a snake draft.
Oh, sports! I'm scared.
But I'm going to explain how this is going to work. All right.
Okay, great.
So it's going to be a 3-round draft. Okay, snake draft. So you will go first, and then I will have the next two picks. And here's how we play. So if the person that you select gets a question, my team will get either 3 or 5 points. And we got to just talk through the scoring real quick. Okay. So
okay.
Let's say hypothetically you pick Tasha and then she gets a question at the reunion. I get, let's make it 3, but then you get 3 points every time they get a question. So if you pick Tasha, I get 3 points then every time she gets a question asked at the reunion. Okay. If one of the other players, not Jeff, mentions this person by name, then I will get 1 point. So if you draft Tasha and Steven gets asked a question and he mentions Tasha in his answer, I get 1 point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one point for a pure name drop, 3 points, camera focuses on them. We see their name in the lower third.
No. 3 points if they get a question from Jeff Probst.
Yeah. So like if we see like the close up on them and they're actually speaking, right. And that's 3 points.
And this is where it's a question where Jeff says, all right, Tasha, tell me. Okay, when you were out there, they don't have to, let's not bother with lower thirds. If the camera, they could be in the wide shot, like, so let's not worry about camera angles. Specifically, if Jeff asks them a question, that's it.
What if somebody like interrupts someone else's question, a la what Hatch did at the All-Stars reunion? Does that count as well?
If they speak, but Jeff Probst did not call on them, we will give 2 points for that.
So if they speak out of turn, that's 2 points.
If they speak out of turn, because Jeff could shut it down, too.
Yeah, that's very true.
All right. But if they even attempt to speak at a turn and they get an audible, you know, couple of words out, you know, they can't just be like, and Jeff says, I don't have time for this. They got rejected and they got shut down. No points awarded for that.
Do they get 7 points if they're able to plug their social media accounts?
We will give 1 bonus point if any social media outlet is plugged.
And another bonus point if they are able to plug Gigi's Pizza.
Yes, or a business. A plug of anything, we will award a point to. All right.
Okay.
So, but that's sort of a weird thing because this is a snub game. So you sort of like, you know, the person who's, if you're playing for the plugs, the person who's most likely to plug is not probably the person who's most likely to get snubbed.
This is truly the vote for the worst of Rob Has a Podcast games.
Mike Bloomizzle, you get the first pick.
All right. I'm going with my initial winner pick, Monica Padilla.
Monica. Oh, that's a great pick.
Because I feel like Kimmy isn't making it too far into the finale. That's the only connection she had to anyone who's left in the game. I feel like it is not going to be addressed whatsoever. Clamgate will not be addressed.
That is a really strong pick at number one. But that was not going to be my number one pick here in this season. All right.
All right. Who are you going with?
My number one pick. I'm going with Young Woo Hwang, number one.
Oh, that's a good one as well.
And I get my second pick right now, because it's a snake draft, and then you'll have two picks in a row. So I'm taking Woo, number one. I don't see Woo getting a question. What are they going to ask Woo?
I mean, yeah, the only connection he had, again, was with Abby, and Abby's already eliminated at this point.
I mean, I think that it's probably a good bet to get mentioned, get a name drop from Abby Maria, but there's no direct question coming to Woo, where Jeff's like, all right, Woo, tell me, you know, you were out there. What was that like living day to day with Abby Maria? Well, Jeff, it's a challenge. And then audience laughs. It's tough.
Yeah. And then they're like, oh, Woo, you're so lovable. Yeah.
All right. Then for my second pick, I think this is another good pick. I feel very good about this pick.
Well, yeah, it's your pick. You're going to say that.
I feel good about this pick. Very high up on my draft board. I'm going to go with Vidas Puskauskas.
Vidas, you should totally come to yoga.
Where you will not get a question at the finale. Vidas.
I don't know about that. I don't know. I feel like there's such a big deal about being the first voted out that I feel like Jeff might throw him a pity question of like, Vidas, you prepared yourself. Your brother was the winner. You're the first out.
You are wrong, Mike Bloom. You are wrong. Much like Stephen Fishback was that time.
Fishback is wrong!
Because we are in the post-pity question era.
Yeah, but I feel like, I guess, I know we are in the post-pity question era, but I mean, his brother is going to be there in the audience, you know, and I don't think we're going to cut to the audience at all during the show, but I feel like that's a story that Jeff wants to emphasize at least for a few seconds.
No, I think that we are post pity question. You think that they want to highlight Aris too?
Well, I think it's honestly just because Jeff's going to say, we're wrapping up. We're going rapid fire here. Vidas, your brother won the season. You came out for a second chance. You lost. How does that feel?
Mike, I think we are in a post rapid fire era of Survivor. I don't think we even get to the rapid fire round.
I don't know. I mean, the blood versus water and the Cagayan and the Philippines reunions were all pretty even handed. I feel like this could go either way.
Blood versus water, though, that was easy because they had all the pairs together. So it was basically almost like a 10-person season.
That's true. That's true. But I feel like Cagayan, and granted, it didn't happen in Worlds Apart. Well, Worlds Apart was a different matter because they had to allot 15 minutes at the end to talk to the possible Cambodian contestants anyway. But I feel like they've been more, this is maybe me sounding optimistic after the whole Karamoan debacle, but I feel like they've been more even-handed with it. So for all we know, this game could get beef or not, but I don't know. I still think Vidas is going to get a question thrown to him about his relationship with Aris.
All right. Oh, well, I will take the gentleman's bet on that one. I think that with the word Aris will not be said in this finale.
But Aris music might, if Aris grabs the mic.
All right. So here we go, Mike. You get two picks in a row.
All right. So give me Burn Victim PG as one.
Okay.
Because I think, again, her only really relationship lingering thing we remember of her is her relationship with Abby.
All right, so hold on. Let's just talk about this. Okay, so now
sure. You
have one pick left and I have one pick left. We picked all people from the pre-merge.
I mean, I think that's pretty safe territory, right? Because I feel like even when we were going back in the rapid fire days, they really didn't talk to those back row people.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay. So now I'm going to have to make one more pick. I'm between two people right now. I have a feeling you're going to pick the other one if I don't pick them. But I'm going to, you know, it's second chance. You got to make big moves. I am going to go, you know what? Hell, give me Sierra.
Sierra. Oh, wow.
Because I think we died down so much on the vote out her mom, yada, 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 make big moves thing. And she's like mid-jury. I feel like that's a big range too where people don't usually get called on sometimes, especially with a 10-person jury. So I could definitely see Sierra being glossed over. Maybe they throw a question to her about, like, you were in an alliance with Kelly Wentworth and Abby. How was that?
I think that's a pretty bad pick, Mike. I got to be honest.
Oh, boy.
I think it's not a great pick because I think that you're going to get a lot of, I'm going to get a lot of plus twos on this Sierra blurting things out. I think that she's going to be unfiltered at the reunion. And even if she doesn't get called on, I think she's going to be jumping in here and there.
Oh, come on, Sierra. Use that filter. Keep your mouth shut, please.
Yeah. Sierra is going to be all like, Jeff, can I just say this one thing?
Yeah, that's now I just realized that that's very okay. Well, maybe Sierra will be imbibed with enough alcohol at that point that she'll just be very quiet and content with everything.
She's
that's
a huge blurter.
That's true. That's true. Better than a huge blurrer.
Boy, I think that, you know, I'm of two minds here, and I could talk through my pick. I'm tempted to say Shireen. I don't think I'm going to go with Shireen. I feel like that while Shireen would be very interesting, I kind of feel like that they're sort of afraid to call on her because she could go in a lot of different directions that maybe they don't want to explore at the finale. She might be too much of a live wire to call on her because you don't know what direction she's going to go with. But I am going to go probably with a bit of a safer pick. Even though we could certainly go back to the through line of going back to the first season.
I was thinking that too.
We have here Kelly Wigglesworth, but she was so invisible on the show. You got to think that Jeff knows enough not to call on her. She doesn't seem like a blurter. I'm going to go with give me Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yeah, mum's the word with Wigglesworth here. She's not going to blurt out anything unless Abby directly calls her out on stuff because they did not get along well in Ponderosa.
Yeah.
I was between Shireen and Wigglesworth and Sierra, and I obviously made the riskier choice, but I could definitely see Wigglesworth might get that one question, as you said, of like, Kelly, you came back since the first season. How has the game changed? But other than that, she ain't getting talked to.
I am certainly concerned about the obligatory Steven pat himself on the back name drop of Kelly when he talks about all of the big moves that he made this season. But I feel like even that's only going to be a point or two in a mention. And I feel, okay, you know, it's the sixth pick overall, third round. I'll take Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yeah. And I mean, it's also, I mean, pretty, I wouldn't say too like, you know, we picked four women and two guys as well, which I think might be a matter as well, considering that Jeff is the one that's constituting these questions and who knows where his biases may lie.
Yeah. All right. Well, that I'm going to be on pins and needles throughout this entire reunion show now because of this. And so hopefully Matthew Foulkes, who keeps track of the draft that I do with AJ Mass, that he can keep track of this as well, because it's going to be a very exciting finale.
Are you just losing so badly with AJ that you feel you need to make a game to repudiate yourself a little bit?
Yeah, I don't think that's going great.
I got to win something. This will actually get people genuinely invested in the reunion show, which is something that it happened last season before an entirely different reason.
Yeah. I wonder if people at their Survivor finale parties might play this game with their friends.
Yeah, maybe they'll make like a pool where they'll like mark off a square. It's like, okay, everybody, you have to put in $10 and pick a square of someone that won't get talked to at the reunion. Yeah.
And then ultimately, I guess that you could probably just keep track after the end of the night and see who ultimately got the bishy of the person who had the least questions and mentions.
Bishy.
And blurts.
Yes, we have the Bishy and we have the Blurty.
Yeah. So I know that you would never win the Bishy if you are the Blurty.
Yeah, exactly. They counteract each other. No one's taking home two awards in one night.
I like this game. This is a great game.
I like this game
a lot. Thanks a lot, Pat.
Between this and you have the Backlash game, I feel like you're adding to your repertoire of RHAP games right now.
Yeah. So then let's go into a question. This is was a big question for Mike Bloom. Let me start with Andrew.
Hey, Rob and Mike Bloom. This is Andrew Kirk calling from Modesto, California. I don't have a question, but I want to see if Mike Bloom would bring back, give MC Bloom and Izzer a second chance and do a rap on Survivor Second Chance. I would love that. I'm pretty sure I'll listen to RTP would too. Thanks.
All right. Of course, also, you know, it was very much on people's minds. Here's Shut Up Tim.
Hey, Rock and Rob and DJ Bloomy Bloom. I need a freestyle rap about Keith Nail Logic. Thanks, bro, Chachos.
All right, Mike, of course.
My nicknames keep changing by the minute.
So many nicknames. Of course, so many people remember when you rapped about the corporations and the Constitution back.
Well, technically, I didn't rap about the corporations, but I did a take on the rap about corporations.
Yes, when Haley Ford was rapping. And of course, you could hear that during the Mike Bloom voicemail podcast back in Survivor Worlds Apart. But Mike Bloom, are you ready to give us as Tim requested about Keith Nail's No Real Logic.
No Real Logic.
Final voicemail podcast for the season. Maybe I'll double down on the rap effort.
Okay, so what do you need me to do?
So just give me a beat. Let me get into character for a second.
So you just need me to drop a beat?
Yes, drop a beat. I'm in character. Here is MC Blue Mizzard. This just runs the mouth. My name's Keith Nail, and I'm here to say I'm gonna pick two people to play with me in the temple. First, let me choose who to pick. I pick, what's that guy's name? Nick? No, not Nick. It's the one that maybe came before, and is that Jeremy? No, gee, Jeremy got picked with his wife, and he's got two kids, got a pretty nice life, but then there's that one girl. What's her name? I don't know. Please don't blame. I guess I'll pick Spencer. I'm not even going to look. He's kind of nerdy. He looks like he could read a book, so I guess we'll go to the temple. We'll have some fun. Hope nobody brings a gun, but it's a Cambodian temple, so I don't know about that. Hell, it's all illogical. Just throw this out with the hat.
Wow.
Spin.
Mike Bloom Izzle.
That's my Keith Nail logic rap.
Yeah, wow. You did that all off your head as Keith Nail in character?
I really got into the character that was MC Bloom Izzle as Keith Nail. I feel like I really embodied his train of thought there, that very derailed train.
That derailed spaceship.
Yes, that derailed spaceship that ain't coming down to Earth anytime soon.
Yes, wow. That just that spaceship just drifting through space.
And I think it's going to be a long, long time.
Wow, Rocket.
Keith brings that spaceship down.
All right, you're a better poet than Stephen Fishback.
Well, that's not saying much.
Yeah, so Steve, people are going to memorize that poem, that rap. Great job, Mike Blumizel.
Thank you for giving me that pity.
No, we are past the pity era.
That's true. No pity raps thrown my way.
Yes. So great job. Yes.
He's perfect.
Yeah. Well done, Mike.
Thank you, Savage.
Right. So, I mean, since we're talking music already right now, actually, I have two different songs that were written about this episode.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I thought that this would be a great way for the listeners of this podcast to weigh in on which musical selection they prefer.
Okay, so we'll have a fan vote that occurs after the podcast is released.
After the podcast is over, I want people to tell me, when we give the hashtag, then I want them to hashtag either hashtag vote A or hashtag, or I guess song A or song B.
I feel like we're going with Big Brother America's Choice here.
Which of these songs did you most prefer? Do you like song A or song 1?
Yeah, let's not order them. I guess we can go with A and 1.
Okay. So 1 is A and 1 is 1? That's very confusing.
Well,
one should be 1 and the other should be 2.
Well, let's hear them and then we'll give like little short titles to them.
This is a worse pick than Sierra.
Hey, don't judge that. Why don't we hear the songs and we'll give like short titles to them so it could be like, you know, vote bop or vote bip.
Of course, this is our reigning Survivor song parody champion, Shut Up Tim. Here is his song that he was very inspired by all of the We Talk at Tribal Council last night. So here is his take on all of the Wees.
We are the voting blocks, my friend. And we will reign supreme until the end. We. No time for wimpy non-leaders, 'cause we are the Weers. In a season much better than one world.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a big Queen fan, or a Ween fan, I guess I should say, though. I might have to dock him some points for just going, wee. Not perfect songwriting there, Tim.
For those of you guys who have listened to the Evolution of Strategy chapter 6, when I talk about my night hanging out with Mark Burnett after I got voted out, where he said to me, Rob, you look gay like Freddie Mercury.
Exactly. We could just imagine all the final seven singing that with mustaches. I think that's Mark Burnett's biggest fantasy.
Yeah. So that is that is the version from Shut Up Tim.
Okay. So that's version one.
That's submission number one. Okay. And then number two. This is from a newcomer, and this is a song that was actually requested 2 weeks ago on the Tyson podcast. This is from one of our listeners, Eric.
I throw a fit on a whim. What are my chances to win? Because it's looking quite dim. And now you're dead to me. I cast my vote for the fish. Oh, poopy pants if you wish. I told him get over it. But now he's dead to me. Your hair needs cutting. Clown face smelling moldy. Long pole statue falling. I think you better get going, Joey. Hey, I just met you. And my bracelet's missing. But here's my coven. So call me Abby. At least you made the jury savage. But here's my coven. So call me Abby. Hey, I just met you. And my bracelet's missing. But here's my coven. So call me Abby. At least you made the jury savage. But here's my coven. So call me Abby.
Yeah. All right. So what do you think, Mike, in the song battle?
Well, in terms of vocal ability, I feel like they're right there.
It's very
they're right there.
So evenly matched.
So evenly matched. Like two battering rams.
Yes, it's like Terry versus Aris.
So it's the Terry versus Aris of singing
contest. Tip top toes right there.
I mean, it's tough to go because I mean I love Queen admittedly more than Carly Rae Jepsen, but there were so many more Abby Maria references going back to Bracelet Gate. I don't know. I might have to give it to the newcomer here. No, I love Tim to death, but I don't know. Wee was not your best work, Tim, and you know it.
All right. So how do people vote on this?
All right. So so I guess could be vote for Queen or vote for Carly.
Why don't we just keep it really easy? Okay. And so that we are the voting blocks is song one. Call me Abby.
That's easy.
Song two.
I mean, the first one is not good. The first one's going to be an entire tweet. They won't be able to include any more information about that besides our handles and
one or song two. That's the hashtag.
Okay. All right. So song one or song two. Okay. We got
that's
it.
How you vote.
Perfect.
Okay. And I'll put my vote at the end of this podcast.
And
that'll
then
be the closing music, my vote.
Whoever wins, do they get to eat on a diet of oysters and ocelots?
they'll get the reigning song battle championship.
All right. I like this. Let's keep making this a thing every year, too.
Just for the week. It's just for the week.
maybe for an offseason, we can have our own American Idol style where we are the judging panel and people bring in their own Survivor parody songs.
Yeah. It's the song of the week. They'll have the title for song of the week. Okay.
Okay. All right. I like that.
So, Mike, before we get into talking social media, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are our friends over at Blue Apron. Now, you know I love Blue Apron because it's the best way to go. You don't have to bother with going to the grocery store because Blue Apron ships you all the ingredients you need to put together your own Cambodian style or whatever style feast that you want. Because not only will you feel like you know your way around the kitchen, but cooking at home will mean that you get to eat healthier and save money instead of ordering that expensive takeout again. Because for less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron will deliver all of the fresh ingredients that you need to create home-cooked meals. Just follow the easy step-by-step instructions. It's so easy. Keith Nail could do it.
Look, he can make a big living now as a Geico spokesperson. He could become the new wee screaming pig or the gecko. Hey,
if you would have asked me a couple of weeks ago if I would have gone to planet Jupiter or made my own dinner, people would have said I'd go into Jupiter.
I need to be in a spacesuit while he's doing this commercial.
Each meal can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. No overwhelming trips to the grocery store and no more sad takeout. No matter your dietary preferences, Blue Apron makes it a breeze to discover and prepare dishes like this week's entree, citrus glazed shrimp stir fry with brown rice, bok choy, and cashews, or for you vegetarians, beet and barley risotto. Cook with ingredients you've never even used before, like the watermelon radish, farro, and the elusive purple potato. And with recipes between 500 to 700 calories per portion, it's delicious and good for you. Right now, you'll get your first two meals for free at blueapron.com/RHAP. That's blueapron.com/RHAP, Blue Apron. It's a better way to cook.
One of the fun facts about the purple potato is that nobody really remembers it until it ends up quitting the dish.
Yes. Well done. All right. Are you ready to talk about some Survivor social media?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. Let's kick it off. Ryan Elder for the last time in the regular season.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. They're better than being a part of the We That Reigns Supreme. Tweets.
The We That Reigns Supreme.
It's a golden we.
All right. Great job by Ryan Elder. Of course, you can follow Ryan Elder on Twitter. He's at Ryan Elder Music. Okay. So here we go. Let's go into our tweets from last night. Stephen Fishback, he tweeted, viewing party. Did you see Stephen Fishback? Did you go to Stephen Fishback's viewing party?
I did not. A variety of factors were incorporated to that, but I heard he packed the place.
He packed the place. Why didn't you go? Too good?
No. I want to make sure that I was able to fully see the episode when I came to talk with you. And I know that Know-It-Alls does a great job of everyone settling down and watching the episode. But I feared from other viewing parties that things would get too raucous and out of control. So I unfortunately missed it. But I heard everyone had a great time and were packed to the rafters. Sure.
So Steve Fishback tweeted, viewing party tonight was to celebrate this shirt. What do you think of Steven's shirt? Could you describe it?
God, I would say if the 4th of July fornicated with a palm tree, that would probably be what that shirt represented.
Why does Steven even own that shirt?
Well, the reason why he wore it was because it was the 4th of July, and they alluded to that when Abby got voted out in her Ponderosa video. But I also don't know these, and you probably don't know it either, since you spent a grand total of like what, one night over at the Loser Lodge.
That's right.
But like, do they have like do they delve into their personal wardrobe for that? Or do you think they like, well, crap, Steven doesn't have anything red, white, or blue. Brad, the cameraman, come over here.
They don't dress you for that. I mean, you have a bunch of stuff with you. I mean, when you go on Survivor, at least how it was when I went, is like you bring a lot of stuff with you. And they tell you like, bring stuff for 36 days because you could be voted off first.
Do you think then he was trying to like peacock himself to be like, I want people to pay more attention to me on the jury. Let me wear something ridiculous to try to best Savage's beanie for the 4th week in a row.
I think that's possible. Yeah.
I mean, it's tough to best that beanie. I'm pretty sure Savage is trying to just jump into the body of Colin Farrell at this point with the way he's rocking that beanie.
Okay, Jeremy Collins, he got himself into a bit of hot water in this episode.
Oh, snap.
Because he mentioned that Abby Maria, he wouldn't want to date Abby Maria. She's probably a Scorpio. He's got two Scorpios at his house. Scorpios are crazy.
Yeah, so... And this has been fact checked, right? Abby is a Scorpio.
I don't know. I didn't fact check that. Where is Max Dawson on this?
We're gonna have to bring back Survivor birthdays, Rob, so we can figure out which Survivor contestants are Scorpios.
Yeah. Okay. So Abby Maria, what is her? Where is her birthday? So Abby Maria, I believe her birthday is her birthday is the day after mine. She would be a Libra.
Oh, so Jeremy is incorrect. He is not an astrology person.
Yes. So, Jeremy is wrong.
Oh, snap.
So, I mean, he did ask, is she a Scorpio? And granted, you know, the cameraman couldn't answer back.
To be fair, she's on the cusp. You know, she's right in that area, but I feel like she's probably a week away.
That happens. I mean, I'm on the cusp of Leo and Virgo, and I feel like I swing both ways. I show tendencies of each.
Sorry, Mike.
Hey, Max Dawson is offended.
Sorry. I apologize, Max, if you're listening. Pretending to fall asleep when Mike talked about what zodiac signs he's on the cusp of.
Well, that off-season podcast idea is nixed.
I apologize. That was very rude.
Well, I thought we were going to do a Miss Cleo podcast when we bring in Miss Cleo from Big Brother.
Oh, I thought you were going to be Miss Cleo the psychic to talk about astrology.
Yeah, exactly. Miss Rob, Abby Maria showing signs of irritability.
Okay, so Jeremy Collins said, I guess he was hearing it from a lot of people. He said, I mean, I love Scorpios. They're loving and loyal and not crazy at all. # foot in mouth.
Yep, he's going on his apology tour right now through Twitter.
Oh, snap.
He also tweeted then, did I mention how much I love Scorpios? # random thought. # they are not crazy. # well, maybe a little.
Maybe some Scorpios are starting to send him death threats.
Yeah,
now.
He's like Abby Maria voting out Joe from the Scorpios.
Yeah, the official Scorpio account has sent him a death threat.
Yes.
Watch your hose. Yes.
Also, he said, I'm getting roasted by every Scorpio I know, including at Val Collins, who said, did you just call us crazy? With like a bunch of exclamation points.
Oh, boy. Yeah, this is another reason why I want the social media blackout, too, because it gets you in hot water with your spouses.
Right. All right. Jeff Varner, he was back on Twitter.
Verner!
He said, I'd give my left nut to go on this reward. Wow.
What just bit my ass?
Scorpio.
Really? I mean, is it that great, that reward?
So yeah, what did you think? I mean, people were saying this like one of the best rewards in Survivor history. Where does this rank up for you? You've watched all 30 seasons of Survivor. You've experienced countless number of individual rewards at this point. Where does this stack up for you?
I mean, Mike, I am the wrong person to ask when it comes to the sort of like sentimentality of going to visit the ruins of any of these places. That the reward did not faze me at all.
I would put, there's two that I can think of that I would put above this, and that is the reward in Africa when they had the hot air balloon ride and they saw the wildebeest stampeding.
Yes.
And the other one is the in Vanuatu, the trip to the volcano at the final five. I thought those are two that are definitely, again, this one was awesome. And I am, again, as a Survivor sort of purist, I'm super happy whenever they sort of relate back to the culture. I was a little miffed in the double episode when they went to that village and did nothing with it. So I'm always happy when they get back to the culture for a second, but I feel like it doesn't hold a candle to those two.
Yeah, I feel like the ones where you get to go like overnight and stay in like a resort, I feel like that's probably tops, you know, camping out at the Cambodian temple, but that's just me.
Yeah, I would say so. And they didn't even show the overnight part.
Yeah,
it's
been so boring that they were like, all right, skip it.
But you're with Keith Nail overnight. There's got to be fun stuff that's going on.
You would
on.
Think so. Unless you Absolutely. Go to space, I think. And also, so Max Dawson, he did tweet at Jeremy Collins with the astrology reference. I feel vindicated.
Not so much. Apparently not on this podcast, Max, considering you're making people fall asleep with the astrology talk.
Maybe you and Max Dawson could hang out and really shoot the ass talking astrology.
I really don't know anything about astrology, except that I know what I am.
Yes. Which was very funny, because then Max Dawson also weighed in and said, and with the astrology reference, at E. Orleans unfriends Jeremy to Collins.
FUJC.
Yes, because Eliza then did, right on cue, tweet, oh, Jeremy, there's no such thing as astrology. Come on.
Oh my God. I think actually you need a debate podcast in the off season to debate a variety of Survivor topics. And one of them can be, does astrology
yeah,
exist?
Yeah, Max versus Eliza in the astrology
with Miss Cleo weighing in.
the real psychic.
Yeah, she'll be the bailiff of the people's court.
And then also Eliza tweeted, 5-piece puzzle, way too simple. Come on. Is that Eliza's new catchphrase? Come
yeah,
on.
She's the Joe Bluth of the Survivor Tweeny community now.
Yes. She also tweeted, Savage still wearing that stupid beanie. # Survivor. That's where she could have used that. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I feel like not every instance, whether it's a come on.
She did use her patented # for the season, FYAS.
That's like a new Village People song.
Yes. Okay. Also, then, a couple of more of these. Okay. Oh, so we don't have a Rupert tweet game this week.
Oh, really?
Sorry about that, Mike. But we do have a new game that we're trying out here tonight.
All right, what's that?
We'll see if it goes better than the Bishy game. All right, so instead of the Rupert tweet, again, Rupert did not, he forgot to preload all of his tweets last night, so there were no Rupert tweets that went out. So we do have a new standout in the Survivor tweeting world, somebody who's just been on fire this season. We have the T-Bird tweet game.
Tweets, baby, tweets. They're better than something that happened on Survivor.
Yeah.
T-Bird tweets.
Okay.
I feel like you need to emphasize every other word as if it's in all caps.
Yeah, so the T-Bird...
tweets, baby tweets!
Okay, so for the T-Bird tweets, to denote where the capitals are, I will probably just try to speak louder.
Okay, that okay, works.
Here we go. T-Bird tweets. Okay. There's a lot of at replies also in T-Bird tweets.
Okay, so she's having conversations.
Yeah,
this
she's
is
really
good.
Just like hitting everybody. So T-Bird tweet number one. At Jeff Probst, great job! On rope management to at Survivor Keith, but forgot to introduce you to at Miss Foxy Tasha Keith, Tasha Keith. # Survivor.
Oh, okay.
She gets her money's worth on these tweets.
It's tough though. It's also tough to denote punctuation in there as well. Was there any punctuation there? Was it just one
comma that follows Keith Tasha, one comma Tasha Keith.
Okay. So it's a little bit of a run on sentence there
yeah.
too.
Okay. I will give you punctuation also.
Thank you. You're dictating it for
yes,
me.
Yes. Like Siri.
Yes.
Okay. So then here we go. Listen up, # Survivor fans. I don't know her. Never met her, but Guess who's running the show? Ellipses. At Miss Foxy Tasha. She's calling all the shots. Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point.
Wow, she is very adamant about that sailing fox calling all the shots.
Yes. All right, here we go. There's number three. Wow! At Jeremy 2 Collins, we'll have a mess of trouble to deal with when he gets back. Exclamation point, exclamation point. Good thing I'm a Taurus!
We're slowly gaining history here. We don't even need Max. People will fill in their astrology signs themselves.
Yep. That's number three. Uh-huh. And number four. Okay, dear fun loyal hashtag survivor watchers, next stop, the at Abby Maria takes on the hashtag Ponderosa. Move over, Cass MCQ. There's a new witch in town.
That all got squeezed into 140 yeah. characters? She's not using Twit Longer
She's
here?
She's not using T-Bird Twit Longer.
Wow. Okay. All right. So just, I'm going to paraphrase these four tweets here. So the first one is saying, Jeff giving people rope.
Yeah, I'll read it in my real voice. Okay. So at Jeff Probst, great job on rope management to Survivor Keith, but forgot to introduce you to Miss Foxy Tasha, Keith Tasha, Tasha Keith, Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
That's one.
Uh-huh.
Listen up, Survivor fans. I don't even know her. Never met her, but guess who's running the show? Miss Foxy Tasha. She is calling all the shots.
Okay.
And then, wow, Jeremy 2 Collins will have a mess of trouble to deal with when he gets back. Good thing I'm a Taurus.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, okay, dear, fun, loyal Survivor watchers. Next stop, the Abby Maria takes on the Ponderosa. Move over, Cass McHugh. There's a new witch in town.
So I'm tempted to pick one or four here because I feel like two, T-Bird is such a cheerleader that she is ready to support Tasha no matter what. Again, even though I haven't met her, and I feel like T-Bird's also generous enough that she would offer up her own astrological sign to Jeremy as mm-hmm. well. And you also didn't look up Survivor astrological signs ahead of time. So I have a feeling that you wouldn't outwardly offer the information that T-Bird is a Taurus. So it's between Keith, Tasha, Tasha, Keith, or Abby's going to Ponderosa, move over, a new witch is coming. One just seems like too much of a run-on sentence for me. Maybe it's the conjunction junction conductor speaking out of me, but I might have to go with number one being the fake T-Bird.
Final
tweet.
Answer?
Final answer, locking it in.
No pumpkin, no.
Ah!
All right, what's your second guess?
I guess I'm going to go with number four.
Which is new witch in town?
Yeah.
No pumpkin, no.
No! So now I have to choose between Taurus or Go Tasha. Maybe you tricked me with the astrological sign here, Rob. Maybe you duped me here. Let me go with number three, because I don't want T-Bird to never speak positively about these people.
Yep. I got you.
You tricked me, Rob. You got me. You Cleo'd me.
It was me.
Of course, T-Bird would be the one that snuck in the answer for me.
Yep, looked up T-Bird's birthday. It's in May.
I trust in my gut, and my gut gave me the wrong answer, malaria. Yep.
I believe it was probably during the Survivor campaign, the Second Chance campaign. You might have known that.
Yeah, absolutely. But okay, I guess that makes sense, because again, she would not disparage anyone in a tweet.
Yeah, well, she did say that, that Cass, we have a new witch.
Yeah, but I mean, like, witch, as Abby Maria pointed out, witches can be good. Yeah.
T-Bird's birthday, May 5th. Cinco de Mayo for T-Bird.
She is such a party girl. I could totally imagine that.
Yeah. Okay. Randy tweets. Randy said, attention Survivor applicants, if the phone rings, take swimming lessons.
What did you think, by the way? I feel like we haven't talked about that Tasha drowning situation. I mean, well, what did you... I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of stuff that happens off camera. You're at your firsthand exposure to that. Did you think it was overblown, or did you think it was it, were you scared at all for what happened?
I mean, I didn't think Tasha was dead. I mean, I think she's been tweeting this season, so I didn't think that we lost her. So I mean, I have to say that I wasn't too worried. I didn't think it was going to be a medevac situation.
Yeah. I just feel like, I mean, again, it was blown out in the next time on it. I feel like it was a good, you know, it was a big moment, but I feel like there's been so much more stuff that's happened behind the scenes in terms of people's bodies giving out. And we even saw it happen with Austin in Pearl Islands. So I didn't feel like it was so significant that it needed this huge spotlight, unless Jeff is so adamant about. People are throwing themselves into this game.
I'm sure it was scary for Tasha in the moment, but as a TV viewer, I wasn't really worried about her because it seems like she's fine based on the fact that, you know, she's been back for a couple of months, and so I wasn't super scared. And it didn't seem like it was a medevac situation, where I felt more like the coming attractions going into the Joe episode. I thought that that statue fell on somebody's head, and I thought that somebody was going to come out of the game maybe for that, but I didn't think that Tasha had a realistic chance to be medevaced over this.
By the way, big Jeff Probst douche moment with, like, Tasha, you're okay? Great. Well, let's get to the other part of this story, which is Spencer wins immunity. Yeah.
How about that?
Like, he's like, all right, everybody, show's over.
Yeah. All right. So then a couple more tweets. Randy also said, did not think the beanie could get worse. I was wrong. Just accessorized with a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah.
Doesn't Randy wear Hawaiian shirts? Or Tommy Bahama isn't Hawaiian.
Well, I feel like if you combine them both, it's like if Magnum P.I. became a hipster.
Yeah. I could see it. He has the mustache going already.
I can unfortunately see it. I could see a reboot in the making. Don't get any ideas, CBS.
Check this out. John Mish and Jacqueline Mish, again, speaking of the people from Hunapu, they were live tweeting the show last night.
Oh, really?
Yeah, who knew?
Well, I think they heard the Hunapu drop and they had a spidey sense tingling that they had to tweet about it.
We had John Mish said, wasn't Abby voting with Keith for Tasha? Either I'm missing something or there was some off-screen stuff. Or Abby just pulled an Abby. So John Mish throwing some shade at Abby Maria.
Yeah, but I mean, I think he was completely correct in that. And we found out through a lot of exit press that it turned out that she was going to flip on them all along and she got told the wrong planet intentionally.
Does John Mish not know?
With me, you're dead.
I don't think he hasn't experienced it firsthand yet, so he has yet to feel that sting.
Okay, Jacqueline Mish said, OMG, Keith sent me to exile after he beat me at this challenge, huh?
Yeah, I'm sure Jacqueline is reliving those memories. Yeah.
And then, dear Franny, Francesca, she's getting ready for Franny versus the puzzle season. She said,
Franny versus the puzzle.
She said, excuse me, at Jeremy Two Collins, we are not crazy, we are spirited. Hashtag Scorpio.
I feel like when you have to say you're not crazy, you're a little crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Just like when people we had a person on Top Chef in the first episode be like, I'm a sassy chef, and I always feel like if you have to say you're sassy, you're not that sassy.
You have to say it. If you have to declare it, that's always, I always like to lean on that.
Yeah, show not tell.
Yeah, okay. And then finally, one last Billy Garcia tweet: nice shirt by at Stephen Fishback, and I know shirts on Survivor.
Yes, considering his fantastic giant skull on a black t-shirt ensemble.
Billy Garcia.
With a do-rag. Yeah.
So Steven's shirt got the Billy Garcia seal of approval.
I think Steven might want to erase that seal after a report.
Mike Bloom, what a great job you've done today. We have really set the stage for the Survivor finale on Wednesday.
Thank you very much for having me. This was a lot of fun. We got to play a lot of new games, and I am, as I said, I think we're very high on this season, and I'm ready to get higher.
Whoa.
A couple more puffs
of, Mike, take please,
a couple more
podcast.
Puffs of this season, and see, hopefully this finale and this never before seen moment will put it in the pantheon.
All right. So Mike, let's get down to this. What's the hashtag? I got some nominees for you.
All right, throw them
out.
We
have Peck Off.
Yeah, we have Peck Off.
We have Abby Mulria.
Okay.
Sounds like a disease. We have PMES. Mm-hmm. We have Apollo Thirkeith. That's as bad as your pick of Sierra in the Bishy game.
Again, that's your opinion. We'll see what the commenters have to say about
that. We'll see
that.
What reality has to say on Wednesday. Sierra, if you're listening, please just blurt out a million things just so I win the game.
No, Sierra, if you're listening to this, get laryngitis. Part of your face off the weekend before so you can't speak at the reunion.
Sierra, don't listen to the Mike Blooms of this world. You got to make big moves at the finale.
Sierra, I'm the Mike Blooms. I'm one of the people that voted you in. You have to listen to your population here. Your constituents want you to not talk at the reunion.
All right, what's the hashtag?
We could do something Franny versus the puzzle too.
That's a little long, but what do you got?
We could do Apollo 13.
It's so bad, don't do Apollo 13.
It's so bad. Okay, let's not do that. You want to go with PMES nice and short
for pre-merge edit syndrome. What would you rather have, a case of PMES or Abby Mulria?
Abby Mulria is easily removable. I feel like PMES comes and goes every season. Yeah.
Okay. All right. There you go. PMES for the great Mike Bloom. He's at a Mike Bloom type. Very fun talk with Mike Bloom.
Absolutely. And this was super fun to talk about. And I mean, I would say a message from all the fans, Rob. I think you really killed it with your coverage this season, the people that you brought on. It's been a really great opportunity to talk with a lot of people that we haven't spoken to in a long time or even ever. And I think this has just been a great opportunity to hear from new voices and to see people come back to the Survivor community as well. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, thank you so much, Mike.
What a nerd. Such a nerd.
Jeremy,
I'll take that as a badge of honor, Jeremy.
Yeah.
That I put together in 5 seconds.
All right. So we've got so much coming. Mike, are you pumped up for the Amazing Race finale on Friday?
I am. I'm excited for a hopefully climactic outcome. Hopefully the obvious will not occur.
Should be a lot of fun. Jessica, Lisa, and I will be live at 9:15 p.m. Eastern time on Friday. Plus, we've got so much more. I've got a couple of other surprises that could come together. Some bonus podcasts potentially between now and then. Of course, Survivor Know It Alls. We're attempting to make the big moves. Oh, I'll be at the finale. I could tell everybody, like, hey, Sierra, make sure you come on.
No, come on. You gotta keep this fair, Rob. I'll have no access to anyone at the finale.
I'll be like, come on, Monica. Come on. What are you gonna? You gonna just take this lying down, Monica?
Well, then, if that's the case, I'll start.
PG, come on.
I'll start getting followers before the finale to start tweeting death threats to people to Vetus to start talking at the finale.
Let me text Steven. Hey, could you maybe
you have to mention the following people or you don't come
could
back.
Could you name drop PG for me, Steven?
Oh boy. Oh, I'm at such a disadvantage here, but the underdogs
you're the underdog Wentworth at this.
I am the hashtag underdog Wentworth, and I'll spell hashtag out for that one.
All right. So also very exciting. This whole week is going to be a lot of fun next week, and we'll have Amazing Race exit interviews, Survivor finale coverage. We'll do a Survivor wrap up at the end of the season. So we're really going to go out with a bang. And then all of this leading up to, we're going to have a Happy Holidays 4 coming up later this month. I'm hoping to do the top 10 moments in RHAP this season, and so I'll have some more news on that as we get a little closer. Want to hear from you guys on some of your favorite moments from the year on RHAP, and so that should be a lot of fun. And also, just wanted to say thanks again for everybody who's been using our links for Amazon.com this month. We appreciate it so much when you guys start your shopping with your robhasawebsite.com/Amazon or for our friends in Canada, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon.ca. I know I will be on there this weekend trying to cram in getting some presents for people as we start to approach that other deadline.
Yeah, all the people that you're going to pay off to not talk at the reunion.
Yes, and also Happy Hanukkah to all of our listeners who have been celebrating all week long.
Yeah, absolutely. It's much like Spencer at some point in this game. It's been a miracle that the oil burned through to last all eight nights.
And don't forget, listeners, to cast your vote for which song you wanted to vote for here on Rob Has a Podcast Music Challenge this week. Song one or song two. And so I'll take you out with my vote for this week's song. Have a good one, everybody. Take care.
I knew it was this one.
I throw a fit on a whim. What are my chances to win? Because it's looking quite dim. And now you're dead to me. I cast my vote for the fish. Oh, poopy pants if you wish. I told him get over it. But now he's dead to me. Your hair needs cutting. Clown face smelling moldy. Long pole statue falling. I think you better get going, Joey. Hey, I just met you. And my bracelet's missing. But here's my coven, so call me Abby. At least you made the jury savage. But here's my coven, so call me Abby. Hey, I just met you, and my bracelet's missing. But here's my coven, so call me Abby. At least you made the jury savage.
But here's my coven,
so call me Abby.
Call me Abby.
With me, your dad.